nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get started with the presentation calendar, I'm sure like a lot of people, many in this room, I thought long and hard about 6 years ago today, September 11th. I think it's only appropriate to take a moment, and I'd like to read a little prepared statement I wrote and then have a moment of silence on the sixth anniversary of a tremendous and tragedy for our country. On the morning of September 11th, 2001, the United States of America woke to find itself under attack. In the city of New York, two hijacked commercial airliners were crashed into the World Trade Center. Less than 2 hours later, both 110-story Twin Towers collapsed, killing some 5,000 innocent men, women, and children. The Pentagon was attacked with a third plane while a fourth plane was headed for the Capitol. With a call of let's roll, heroic Americans fought back against this senseless attack. It was the darkest day in American history, costing more lives than the attacks on Pearl Harbor or D-Day. In the aftermath of this unimaginable tragedy, New Yorkers and all Americans have united as ever before. Inspired by countless examples of courage, generosity, we have met the worst of humanity with the best of humanity. The darkest day in our long history has led to one of our finest hours. Those who went to work in the World Trade Center on September 11th were engaged in the quiet heroism of supporting their families, pursuing their dreams, and playing their own meaningful part in a diverse and dynamic free society. We will never know many of the selfless acts of courage that occurred among them that day, but they will occupy a sacred place in my hearts and I know in the hearts of many others in history. They must never be forgotten. Please join me in a moment of silence on the sixth anniversary of September 11th. Thank you. Supervisor Robert, did you also want to make an announcement before we present it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, again, would like to take this opportunity, the North County and others who have worked with this individual. We lost last week a very good friend, and I'd worked with him for a number of years, and his personality, his beliefs, and his support of the North County, and that was Tom Vaughn. Tragically, at a very young age, we've lost him. If we could, I'd kind of like just to get a moment of silence for Tom. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And others have been asking, there is a celebration of life for Tom, which will be Thursday at 4:30, Robert Hall Winery, for those that are looking to attend. Thank you.
Madam Clerk, I'm sorry, we got a little out of order here. Would you read the changes to the agenda today?
Thank you. Changes to today's agenda under amended consent amended item B9 is submittal of 1, a resolution to surplus and sale county-owned vacant real property totaling approximately 2.51 acres in the unincorporated area of California Valley to an adjacent property owner, and 2, a request to approve a corresponding budget adjustment in the amount of $20,000 from unanticipated revenue into the countywide building renovation, WBS 350010, recommend approval and instruct chairpersons to sign. The attached quitclaim deed was inadvertently left out of the staff report. The deed is attached for your approval. Item B19, the following map is received and has satisfied all conditions of approval that were established in the public hearing on its tentative map. For A, Tract 2645, a proposed subdivision resulting in 6 lots by Oakview Development, Willow Road at Albert Way, Napomo Mesa. Reject the offer of dedication for streets, drainage easements, and trail easements without prejudice to future acceptance. Act on the resolution to accept the offer of dedication for the slope easement along Willow Road. And act on the resolution to accept the relinquishment of access rights along Willow Road, 4th District. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that the attached resolution be added to the staff report. The resolution is attached for your approval. Hearing amended items is C1, a hearing to consider an appeal by Philip De Silva of the Planning Commission's decision to approve a request by the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship for a conditional use permit, DRC 2005-00276, that would allow a phased development of an 11,000 square foot religious facility located at 6445 Edna Road in the Edna Los Ranchos Community 3rd District. This item was continued from June 5, 2007. Request item be continued to a later date to prepare an environmental impact report. The staff report for this item was incorrectly numbered. Staff is requesting that the staff report be numbered to reflect that it is item C1 and not item C3 as listed. Staff is requesting that page 2 of the letter from Oasis Landscape be added to the staff report. The page was inadvertently left out of the report. And those are the changes to today's agenda.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson, would you like to lead off with our first presentation?
Move approval.
Thank you. Move approval of the presentation calendar.
I'll second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It gives me great pleasure to read a resolution proclaiming September 15, 2007 as California Coastal Cleanup Day in San Luis Obispo County. Here to receive the proclamation, Morgan Rafferty of EcoSlow and Jan Marks, also of EcoSlow. If you want to come forward, and I'll read the resolution. The following resolution is hereby offered in red. Whereas the state of California has a remarkably varied coastline of sandy beaches, rocky shores, productive estuaries, marshes, tidal flats, urban areas, and harbors. And whereas San Luis Obispo County is strongly committed to the wise management of the coastline to ensure that the environmental, recreational, and economic value of the coastline zone will be sustained. And whereas Californians are now adopting beaches year-round through the California Coastal Commission's Adopt a Beach program. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors hereby proclaim September 15th as California Coastal Cleanup Day in San Luis Obispo County and encourages individual citizens, businesses, groups, and public institutions to observe this event and to participate in appropriate activities designed to promote a healthy and productive coastal environment for the benefit of the people of San Luis Obispo County, California, and the nation. Thank you.
And I'd like to introduce David Kirk, one of our staff people who's been most responsible for planning coastal cleanup.
Mr. Rafferty, if you could step forward, because, like I say, every week I get no less than a half a dozen calls when people say, would you ask people to speak a little louder and closer to the microphone? So you have to state your name for the record, and then please continue.
My name is Morgan Rafferty. I'm the director of the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo, and I would like to introduce David Kirk, our staff member who has been most responsible for planning Coastal Cleanup Day this year.
Thanks, Morgan. And I'd like to take a moment just to thank you, gentlemen, for your support of Coastal Cleanup Day and just tell you a little bit about it. This Saturday, we're expecting about 1,600 volunteers to show up and take about 6,000 pounds of trash and recyclables off of our county beaches. We have 25 site locations throughout the county, all the way from Cayucas down to the Oceano Dunes and Point Sal. You can imagine the tremendous environmental benefits this event has for our county every year, from preventing birds and marine mammals from being entangled in marine debris to the effects on human health that it has on people who visit the beach every year. And so there's lots of environmental benefits that I could get through, but there's also tremendous benefits for our economy in terms of you can imagine what would happen if 6,000 pounds of trash every year stayed on our beaches. I don't think we get as many visitors as we have every year, so I just want to thank you again for your support, and I think this is a really important event, and we hope to see you out there this Saturday. Thank you.
Thank you.
Something for each of you.
The right side.
Yes, I brought
you. Okay.
Sunscreen, yeah.
Janelle Marks, San Luis Obispo. We are presenting you with Coastal Cleanup T-shirts, we hope that everyone will turn out at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing that our drug and alcohol representatives just got in and got to be seated, can you please come forward and step to the podium? Our next presentation is going to be recognizing September 2007 as National Alcohol and Drug Addiction Recovery Month. So would our representatives, who are going to come through, Don't be bashful now. Jason, don't be pointing the finger. I think it'll be you two. We'll start, and we'll all scan the room and see who else wants to come up.
Come on, Brad. Jesus.
Contrary to some of the opinion, we don't bite. We're friendly up here. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas as many as 2.2 million people in the United States have faced a substance use disorder in the past year, according to the latest national figures, and they deserve to experience the many benefits and treatment. And whereas treatment for substance abuse disorders has a large and meaningful impact on our community. Research shows that substance use disorders are medical conditions that can be effectively treated, just as many illnesses are treatable. Treatments for drug use disorders are just as effective as treatment for other chronic conditions such as high blood pressure, asthma, and diabetes. Whereas for the above reasons, we are asking all citizens of San Luis Obispo County to join in celebrating this September as National Drug Addiction Recovery Month, encouraging us all to learn more about how to help those suffering from substance use disorders and to receive treatment so they can contribute to our community. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim September 2007 as National Alcohol and Drug Addiction Recovery Month in San Luis Obispo County and joins the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, and the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy in encouraging participation in this recovery month. Jason, in the center? By the numbers.
A little
slide over a little bit more.
Okay.
And please don't forget to speak clearly and so people can hear me, because that's the number one complaint I've gotten in the last 3 weeks is that the audience, either listening or watching on television, they have a hard time hearing. So please step a little close to that podium and state your name for the record and have at it.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I want to thank you very much. My name is Wayne Hansen. I'm from San Luis Obispo County Behavioral Health, Drug and Alcohol Services. And I want to thank you very much for this resolution. As you stated, substance abuse is the most preventable chronic illness in the United States. And all the staff, all the county workers who provide services for people with addictions in this county work 24/7 to make this a healthy and prosperous county. We see pretty close to 2,500 people with addictions in this county every year, and over the last, I'd say, 32 years that Drug and Alcohol Services has been in business, there are thousands of grateful people who have been addicted to drugs or other, to alcohol or other drugs, who are now living safe, clean, sober lives, who are grateful to the services that you've helped provide. So thank you very much, and we'll stay in business. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Jason, are you going to come up, say a few words? Suwin? I think you both should, if you're going to have to discuss it over there.
Well, I was actually hoping, thank you for this opportunity. I was actually hoping Sue Warren, and I'm Jason Wells from Drug and Alcohol Services as well. Sue is probably going to mention North County Connection, and I think sometimes Drug and Alcohol Services gets the limelight a lot, but there are a lot of folks out there who don't ever get the spotlight on them, and those are the North County Connections, the Cambria Connections, the Al-Anons, the many different 12-step groups, the volunteers who work at sober living environments, volunteers who are out in the community every day doing interventions with folks who will never take a step into our door. And those are the people that we really need to reach and try to continue to bring them into all our different services and all our different organizations to be able to help in some way, whether it's with the county or whether it's with a volunteer organization. So thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Sue, we save the best for last.
Oh, thank you. I'm Sue Warren, and I'm with North County Connection, which is a community-based recovery resource center. And I just want to thank all of you on the board, and especially for all the help that you've given us over the years and continuing to see that we can provide those community-supportive services, because one of the things we are beginning to understand with this as a disease is that there is no cure, and it takes lifelong support. Relapse happens with people, and that's our goal, is to provide services out in the community to help prevent relapse, which also helps prevent things like child abuse, problems that would reach law enforcement, a lot of different issues. And I just want to thank your continued support so that our community of volunteers and programs can continue to be there for the community. It helps all of us. Thank you.
Supervisor Patterson has a comment or a question before you stand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Sue for the work that North County Connection and Cambria Connection does. Government can set the foundation, but it's really the volunteers that carry out the work on the ground in many cases, and certainly with North County Connection and Cambria Connection, I've had the opportunity to visit North County Connection and see their program working for the community in Atascadero, and I personally want to thank you, and on behalf of the board, thank you and your volunteers for the work that you do to make these programs successful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next presentation is by Supervisor Asajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chief. At this time, if I may invite Dr. Hollifield and Ms. Campbell to come forward, please. Mr. Chair, it gives me great pleasure to read this resolution proclaiming September 9, 2007 as National Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders Day in San Luis Obispo County. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas healthy children are the most important resource in San Luis Obispo County, and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder poses a serious threat to the potential health of our future generation. And whereas more than 30 years have passed since fetal alcohol syndrome was identified and named as a birth disorder by United States researchers. And whereas in 2006, 27% of pregnant women in San Luis Obispo County reported drinking alcohol in their first trimester. And whereas people around the world began observing International FASD Awareness Day on September 9th each year beginning in 1999, in order that on the ninth day of the ninth month of the year, the world will remember that during the 9 months of pregnancy, a woman should abstain from alcohol. And that's why we have these reflectors that we wear that means 9 months alcohol-free for the best of your child. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim September 9, 2007 as National Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Day in San Luis Obispo County to promote awareness of the effects of prenatal exposure to alcohol, to increase compassion for those individuals so affected, to minimize further effects, and to ensure healthier communities across San Luis Obispo County in the future. If you come forward and accept this resolution, please. And if both of you would like to say a word or two and maybe also a little bit about Martha's Place and Mokpok, that will be appreciated.
I'm Jan Campbell. I'm the Maternal Child and Adolescent Health Director for San Luis Obispo County. And it was my pleasure to begin 4 years ago the work on educating our community on the use of alcohol, drug, and tobacco during pregnancy. We were one of the highest counties in the nation when we began this as far as positive drug use during pregnancy, and our choice drug that we have in this county is alcohol. We were at about 51% when we started 4 years ago, and I'm really happy to tell you that we're down to 27% of women who are assessing positive when they go in for their pregnancy tests. For me, 27% is too high. We need to continue to work because it's our children who end up suffering for all this. And every one of us is affected by what happens to our children. So They're the ones that come behind us. They're the ones that have to support us when we get old. And I think it's really important that we put their well-being first. So I want to thank you for your support in helping us decrease the use of alcohol and other drugs during pregnancy, and to get the information out there. It was in 2004, once we started implementing our program for our 4-piece plus assessment, that we realized that how many of these children were exposed and that we needed to now step in and do something else. So in September of 2004, some of the Board of Supervisors here and other heads of agencies got together and did a scope of work to implement what is now Martha's Place in San Luis Obispo County. This is an agency that provides assessment and interventions for children who have been prenatally exposed to drugs during pregnancy. We started that in November of 2006. And I'm going to let Dr. Hollifield talk a little bit about Martha's Place.
Hi, I'm Dr. Hollifield. I'm the clinical director of Martha's Place Children's Assessment Center. I was kind of caught off guard. I had something prepared for public comment, but if that's okay, I'll go ahead and read what I have. Martha's Place is a transdisciplinary model, and we have an oversight committee called the Model of Care Oversight Committee, or as you mentioned, MOCPOC. And this is a committee that has a lot of community partners and agencies that are involved in trying to create a collaborative community response to this issue. And it's a transdisciplinary model, and what I mean by that is that we have pediatricians, psychologists, clinical psychologists, school psychologists, public health nurse, and infant mental health therapists who, as we have community collaboration, we have clinical collaboration, and we assess the child, we look for treatment resources we may treat at our center, and we form a comprehensive clinical report on the child that caregivers, therapists, or other providers in the community can utilize. What I wanted to say about this particular proclamation is, although it is important to be aware of the problem, it is even better to respond to the problem or take action to address the problem. Our county is one of a few counties in this state and in the country that has developed both prenatal assessment intervention and early childhood assessment and intervention programs. In other words, we are responding as a county, and I think that's important. Why these two developmental periods? Well, prenatally, the brain is the most vulnerable to alcohol and drug exposure. Conversely, in the 0-5 age group, the brain has the best potential for a positive response to a positive caregiving environment and intervention. Thus, beginnings, Martha's Place, are developmentally linked on a continuum of intervention and prevention. Prenatal intervention is prevention of emerging difficulties in early childhood. In the same respect, early intervention is prevention of potential emerging difficulties in school age and adolescence. I'd like to thank the Board of Supervisors for their community support in response to this issue. It is important that we continue to lead the way in innovative programs that help children and families. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hollifield. And I would like to recognize Martha's Place. It's been named after the granddaughter of our former supervisor, Supervisor Bianchi, and whose grandchild we lost in her teenage years. I want to thank both of you for being here this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that was our last presentation. We'll move into public comment. First speaker is Dan Duvall, followed by Jana Vickers, or Vickers. I'm not sure if I mispronounced that or read that.
Thank you, Board Chairman, Board of Supervisors, for allowing me to speak. My name is Dan Duvall. I live at 10660 Las Hosas Valley Road, San Luis Obispo. I am the founder of Sunny Acres, located at 10340 Las Hosas Valley Road, San Luis Obispo.
Mr. Duvall, excuse me, I'll give you an extra few seconds, but could you please raise your voice or get a little closer to that microphone, please, because people in the back are having a hard time hearing you.
I'm here today to ask the county to provide me with a building permit and related fees to add on to the farmhouse located at 10340 Los Osos Valley Road. I feel completely justified in asking the county to do this for Sunny Acres for several reasons. One, over the last 9 years, I feel that it is a very conservative estimate that Sunny Acres has provided more than 2,500 client months with service to include monthly room and board at $300 or less per month. This has been without cost to the taxpayers, with the exception of parole paying 20 client months. I would also like to add that we have asked for and received no grant money, which has been a great savings to the county. This program allows clients to come in with no money and gives opportunity to work for their program fees. In return, clients are taught how to be responsible, accountable, and in time, they are productive members of society. If the county will allow me to add on to the farmhouse, I feel I could provide much-needed housing for needy people, for which the county shares some responsibility. I am not sure that the Board of Supervisors has had necessary communication with staff to understand my request for a building permit. Basically, the only solution I've been offered is to come up with a conditional use permit at an expense of close to $400,000. I do not understand why I should have to pay this exorbitant amount to take care of people that the county should be taking care of in the first place. I would appreciate your careful consideration in this dilemma. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Judy, is it Vickers or Vickers?
Jenna Vickers.
Jenna Vickers, I'm sorry. I had a difficult time reading this. Followed by Jimmy Lack.
Good morning. My name is Jenna Vickers, and I am a resident at Sunny Acres, located at 10340 Los Osos Valley Road, San Luis Obispo, California. I am speaking to send a message to all who will listen. I have been in and out of recovery homes as well as residential programs for 4 years now. None of those programs worked for me. I found Sunny Acres in March of 2007 and have resided there ever since. The program is a simple program with humbling challenges that are teaching me to be accountable, responsible, reliable, and open-minded. I believe in this program very much. I have been an addict and alcoholic since the age of 11. With that, being a productive member of society is a challenge in itself. I am able to be honest, and I am not embarrassed of who I am and where I reside. I honestly believe that our community and our nation are clueless to our need for recovery. We come from functional and dysfunctional families. We come from wealth and not so fortunate families. We are only children and siblings to many. We are fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers. The problem of addiction, alcoholism, and homelessness is not ever going to be cured. But we at Sunny Acres can put a dent in that population. We are self-supporting and ask for no outside contributions. We cost the taxpayers $0 and cents. Sunny Acres is owned by the residents of Sunny Acres, not Dan Duvall. We are asking for an over-the-counter building permit to add on to the primary house on the ranch where we operate the nonprofit. We would like to expand our program and cannot do so without this building permit. We are also requesting a waiver of fees, including school fees, for the permit as well. My opinion is that we have been unfairly refused a permit. If it is legal for someone to add on to their primary house with a permit, then why can't we have one? This is a program that helps other counties, programs such as mental health, parole, and probation. I am one of those clients sentenced here on a court order from Lompoc Superior Court in Santa Barbara County when they saw how well I was doing here. We would like to continue doing our good work in this community by helping others who walk in our shoes. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Jimmy Lack, followed by Michelle Rogers.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. Mr. Cottrell knows my family, and you brought up the 9/11 thing this morning about...
Mr. Lack, you need to state your name for the record, sir.
Oh, yeah. James Anthony Lack.
Thank you.
You brought up the 9/11 thing, and it was a sad day. Communities should pull together here. I see a gap between our government in this county and a man who's trying to help out people who are in need of help. If these people don't get some help, sooner or later, They're going to end up in the side of a ditch, run over by a train, or something like that. So, like I say, we should all be able to work together and come to some kind of conclusion, because I can see there is this gap between government and society and the people trying to help. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Michelle Rogers, followed by Laura Craven.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Rogers. I'm a volunteer at the San Luis Obispo Animal Shelter, and I have concerns about the treatment of the animals that are being held there. They're not always getting the proper care. Their food and water bowls are filthy. There's flies swarming around. The kennels are not always cleaned in a timely manner, which can result in these poor animals that are already in an unfortunate situation becoming more unhealthy and less able to be adopted. I'm also concerned about the medical care that they are receiving. They are supposed to be vaccinated on arrival, and I don't understand how they are getting kennel cough if they are vaccinated. They should be given a Bordetella shot on arrival, which will then hopefully not, they will not then get the kennel cough, and when they get kennel cough, they're put in isolation and not able to be viewed by potential adopters and not able to be exercised. I'm also concerned about the euthanasia laws not being upheld. I hear of mass euthanasias being done, which is illegal, and also not enough poison being used in the euthanasias, which is illegal. Some of these are supposedly adoptable animals. Also, the redemption rules in regards to animals being able to be redeemed by their owners on Sundays and holidays. There are no rules for these days, so if a owner comes in on a Sunday or holiday, then the animals are not able to be released to the owners, even if the facility is given a blank check, and that is wrong. They should be able to, these laws should be changed. There was recently a very tragic incident over the Labor Day holiday because of these rules, not being able to be bent by staff members. What I would like to propose is to request for funding for more paid employees at the facility, which will result in better care of these animals. Currently, the inmates are being trusted to the care of these animals. There's a high turnover rate of these inmates because they are at the honor farm. They might be there one day and gone the next. These inmates, some of them don't know how to care for animals. They don't even like animals in a lot of the situations, and they're being trusted with the animals' care. Also, these inmates are given the opportunity then to interact with the public, which brings into play the fact of drugs being smuggled into the inmates and then into the jail, which is not a safe environment. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Laura Craven, followed by Melissa, is it Atia? Atia. Thank you. Atia.
Hello, thank you. I'm Laura Craven. I volunteer at the Animal Services Shelter. I would like to start off with referring to John Rawls, a social and political philosopher who wrote of the veil of ignorance, the idea that we design a society that will be fair to everyone. Many of us view our pets as members of the family. I ask we add our pets and animals when designing a society that will be fair to everyone in the veil of ignorance. I have concerns for the animals at the Animal Services Shelter. I would like to propose the redemption of family pets be extended to Sunday and holidays. A family pet that is elderly or who has a health condition may die as a result of staying in the shelter for a period of 2 days. I also have concerns, although I am not a firsthand witness, I have heard that euthanasia laws are not being withheld. I am also concerned, although I am not a firsthand witness, how temperament testing is being conducted. I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for your comments. Melissa Atia, followed by John Belcher.
My name is Melissa Atia. I'm a volunteer at the Slo County Shelter. I've started volunteer there because I went as an adopter. I wanted to adopt a pet, and I noticed that firsthand for myself that most of the animals weren't getting proper care. Their bowls were empty on hot days. There were flies everywhere, filth. They were laying in their own feces. And I decided to volunteer to do something about it. But for firsthand, when I started volunteering, I noticed that the people in charge of filling up their bowls and cleaning their cages are inmates from the prison. And they, like the person who spoke before me said, some of them don't care about animals. They don't have experience with them. They really are there because they're forced to be there. They aren't there because they want to be there or that they're getting paid. I propose that instead of having inmates, we have people that actually get paid and care about what they are doing to care for the animals. A lot of these animals aren't getting veterinary care, and they come in sick, and they just spread it off to other animals. And some of these animals that are there that they're getting spread the sicknesses to are family pets. And when their families come in to pick up their pets, they're sick because the diseases have spread. I also propose that we change the redemption policy. If an animal comes in on a Saturday night and the owners come in after it, they cannot redeem their pet due to paperwork, fees, and whatnot. If it's a Sunday, they cannot come in, and Monday, if it's a holiday, they cannot come in, or if it's Christmas or whatever, they still cannot come in and get their pet. Some of us treat our pets as family members. A lot of us who don't have children or children who've moved out of the house treats their pets as if they were their own kids. And we are a society that values our pets and animals. And with this being said, I propose that these redemption policies be changed. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. John Belcher, followed by Ernest Armenta.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. John Belcher. I'm here with Dan Duvall today. I've been working with Dan Duvall on his ranch issues for several years. In 2005, we successfully resolved all the county's enforcement efforts with respect to the property. We are now recently have received additional enforcement measures brought by the county zoning department, the planning department. Some of these are issues that were previously dealt with and have been resurrected. But really, what's really important is what you heard earlier. This is a safe and sober facility. This facility provides housing. This property provides housing that the county, who is responsible for its drug and alcohol recovery program, doesn't address. This is the only facility I know of to which we can refer people. It doesn't cost the county anything, but it fills a need. What we have here is a gap in leadership. We have tried and attempted to remodel a structure that houses people. We've asked for a building permit for an expansion of this building by 3,000 square feet. The building would be smaller in size than your average home in Edna Valley. The planning staff has refused to process this permit on a number of occasions. We need some leadership. We need the board to get together, one or two board members with department heads, to look at what is holding back this entitlement of this group to house their friends and members that need these services. It's a compliment to your drug and alcohol services, which has done an exemplary job, but the job that they've done in this month of awareness, you have to acknowledge that there has to be a housing component to this. And if the county doesn't want to work with Mr. Duvall on these issues at a department head level and with supervisor intervention, I'm afraid that it's going to fall between the cracks and these folks won't have a safe and sober living experience available to them. So we would appreciate some leadership from the board on this point. And please follow up with contacts with the appropriate department heads and let us know what we can do to work through these issues. I pledge to you I'll continue to work with your planning staff as best I can, as we did in 2005, to resolve the outstanding issues. If you'll do your part and coordinate some discussions with department head level. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Ernest Armenta, followed by Eric Greening.
Ernest Stephen Armenta, 1633 North Kensington, Santa Maria, California. As a vice president of the Guadalupe Cooling Employees Association, this is the southern part of the county, right before you get to Guadalupe. It's in San Luis County. We're shippers and growers, which means that we load semites, 180, 90 semites a day. And these are products of fresh produce, celery, broccoli, napa, and bok choy. These are fresh produce, parson, that we ship it all over the state, Hawaii, New York, Maine, Rhode Island. And but I come here today is that there's a lot of industries in San Luis County, high-tech, retail and service, tourism, and ag. And I come to you because I have no other choice but to come, and I figure if I was a county supervisor, and I looked at it, I would want to know and be concerned about how the conditions and how our workforce is being treated in San Luis County. That's important to the economic and, you know, economic development and the financial situation with the county. These are how we want good employers who treat their workers good. See, the ag workers, you don't hear much from us. We don't complain a lot. We get paid not a good wage. We wish it was more, but we work for it, and we work hard. But we have no other choice but to come and address certain issues to the county supervisors of this county. I figured if I was a county supervisor and I knew there was a company out there that was treating their workers, not allowing them to take lunch breaks, working them 7 to 8 hours without lunch, orders from them, and then also having them to drive forklifts with no lights, no horns, no reverse lights, a hazard, someone just waiting. So I understand you got many issues here in San Luis County, the Lido Project, Los Osos, the Nipomo trying to incorporate without water. I understand that. But I would ask you just maybe not to take action. You mean? I won't agree with it, but I'll accept it and respect it. But I would ask you just to hear us. That there are us ag workers who work in that part of the county, southern part of the county, who are not treated fair. And we have no other choice but to come. I'm the chair, vice president of this association, over 50 members, and we have no other choice. We write to Cal OSHA, we call them, we get no response. So I understand that you don't want to get involved, Chairman Lendau? What's your name?
Lenthal.
I understand that you may not want to interfere in private business, but when we have a workers, 19 seconds left. When we have people that work here in San Luis County, all we want to do is be treated fair. So I would ask you to do it. If you don't, but at least you heard me. And all we're asking is that, hey, that if a company, you're going to treat your workforce with dignity in a humane way. Provide us with safe equipment. Allow us to get our lunches. I understand my time's over, and I appreciate you listening to me. And nice chambers.
It is nice.
It is nice compared to Santa Barbara County. This is pretty nice, and I understand you have issues here, but I think...
Unfortunately, sir, your time is up, but I thank you for taking the time off and come up here to enlighten us.
You got it, and you heard my grievances, and I will give...
Thank you for your comments.
Okay, thank you.
Next speaker is Eric Greening, followed by Jerry Seabach.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening. Good morning. And obviously, we are all hoping that the coming season will be wetter than the last season, but many people are finding themselves living under drought conditions. I've been approached by some people who are in areas where they are now getting water by truck, and I didn't have an answer for their questions, and I thought maybe you would share my curiosity about this. Does the county have any role or oversight, particularly environmental health, in assessing the quality of water that's delivered to areas where wells fail when trucks simply go out there and deliver? Normally, environmental health looks at the safety of the water supply, and I didn't have an answer to that question, but I thought rather than try to answer it privately, there may be a lot of others who share that curiosity. There may be people watching and listening who share that curiosity. So perhaps it's time to agendize a sort of a drought update, drought contingency plan agenda item. What are we going to do if there's another dry year? Obviously, there are many different water agencies. There are many people depending on private wells. But what is the county's role? What is the role of the County Flood Control and Water Conservation District? What is the role of environmental health? And if there's a need for coordinated effort to deal with a second dry year in a row, heaven forbid we should get one, but it's very possible. How do we need to all pull together and make sure things work right? So I just offer that as a suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Greening, before you step down, Supervisor Patterson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Greening, have you raised this issue with the Water Resources Advisory Group? You're a member of that.
I raised it last night with the Health Commission. I think this is an issue of environmental health, to know where water is coming from that's being delivered to people. But we certainly, if, you know, the chair is in this room, and so
I guess you have
if he wishes to agendize it, it certainly is a possibility for our next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jerry Seebach, followed by David Dugan.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I was asked to give this little report by Supervisor Ovett, and I'm pleased to, because it's, for once, it's good financial information and good news for the county.
Mr. Seebach, you're going to get me in trouble, though, if you don't state your name for the record. They'll say that I didn't ask you to do the same thing I did to anybody else.
I'm Jerry Seebach, County Auditor Controller.
Thank you.
Late yesterday, we signed a contract to sell approximately $196 million in revenue bonds for construction of the Nacimiento Water Project. The bonds will be issued by the Slo County Financing Authority on behalf of the Slo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. The agencies that will receive and are obligated to pay for the delivery of the water are the cities of San Luis Obispo and Paso Robles, Templeton Community Services District, Tascadero Mutual Water Company, and County Service Area Number 10 in Cayugas. Now, bond Series A is a tax-exempt issue totaling $157 million and carries an all-in total interest cost of approximately 4.7%. Anything less than 5% in today's environment is a very good rate. Bond Series B is a taxable issue covering the Atascadero share of the project in the amount of $38,565,000 and carrying an all-in interest cost of approximately 5.7%, also an excellent rate for a taxable borrowing. These interest rates are very favorable in today's volatile debt market, and will result in annual debt service for the participating agencies that is well within the estimates previously provided to the agencies. This favorable result occurred because of many factors. Consistent hard work on the part of County Public Works staff played a large part. The creative cost-sharing structure proposed by the county and accepted by the participating agencies was also attractive to the bond market. Solid credit ratings were sought and received for the agencies and the finance authority, thus allowing for this sale when concerns about credit quality are paramount in debt markets. The project was well served by the professionals engaged to support the financing. These firms include financial advisors from Public Financial Management, bond counsel Lisa Lee Wells from Fulbright and Jaworski, and an excellent team of bankers and underwriters from UBS. So I think this is good news, and it allows this project to move forward.
Thank you, sir. And how many copies did we sign yesterday?
Five. There'll be a lot more to come.
The reason I'm teasing Mr. Seebach is he brought me one copy at the last minute, and then we just thought we had everything taken care of, and about 10 minutes later, right in the middle of another meeting, he said we've got five more copies to sign, so it's a little bit of an inside joke there. Thank you. Our last speaker in a public comment is David Dugan.
David Dugan, Los Osos. It came to my attention this weekend that there was a person from Los Osos, Cynthia T. Coleman, that I put together a DVD on the World Trade Center as a tribute. And I thought if I tried and lobbied that I could get it presented here this morning. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to get it in. I under the wire in time to be as a presentation, as well as I kind of felt like Lot today asking for at least two righteous people to give up some general public comment time to so I could show it. Since then I have made other arrangements, but it really shows. It showed me that as I went around and asked people for time to show this DVD, this tribute, that people were afraid to get involved because it might be controversial or it might run against maybe there's some official or something like that. They can't do something like that. And I would just like to say that what happened to us on that day should never divide us. People should not look at it as political or as something that and many people have put assess that it was a government plot or that people knew it was going to happen ahead of time. And we need to kind of put that kind of talk behind us. People have died trying to protect this country against the terrorist threat. And I think we need to unite in a common effort and set aside this angst that the politics has put towards this issue of trying to keep the homeland safe and Americans abroad as well as other free nations. And the blood has been spilt, and I don't think that politicizing 9/11 in any way will justify the ends to their means to a political process. And I would just hope that people would take it to heart that those who serve have served and have given the ultimate price for this country, those people should be honored as well as their memories reserved in our thoughts and what's going to happen there at Ground Zero at the WTC site as a memorial that's going to be put in place too. And I would just say, let's not politicize this and honor this memory. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. The last request to speak is Gail Gresham.
Hi, I'm Gail Gresham, and I live in Atascadero, and I'm speaking about animal services. I consider myself a minor volunteer there. I show up occasionally. I take dogs to radio shows. There are other people who take it as a job. They're volunteers. They make an incredible contribution of time that I'm sure saves this county a lot of money. And I also have been around there for some period of time, and there was a period of time where I was really happy and proud to go down there. It was an amazing place. We had a zero kill rate. We were exceptional in terms of the entire United States. People were happy to volunteer there. The staff and the volunteers seemed to get along well. If there were issues where animals needed to be euthanized, actually the volunteers were polled as to who they thought should be considered, unfortunately, because of health problems or attitude, aggression problems with these animals. And something's changed. I know you helped to fund a new position there, which was to be volunteer coordinator. In emails I've gotten back and forth from Dr. Anderson, the title that I see her having is shelter coordinator, which includes way too many things. It's, from my observation, it is supervision of staff, of the inmates, and the volunteers. And most of us in this room have been in business and have been in management, and there are only so many people that one person can supervise efficiently. So I have concerns about the new position you created and how it's being orchestrated. Certainly not in concert, I think, in what your intention was. Also, part of the job of the volunteer coordinator or shelter coordinator, depending upon which title and hat she really wears, is euthanasia of the animals. And my personal opinion is that's really not in concert with what she was brought in to do. There's lots of concerns. There's cleanliness. There's no heating and air conditioning. The animals are in cells, and there's no place for them, you know, to do their business. And if any of us were in a cell, we would also have problems with figuring out how to keep our place clean. some of the other volunteers who haven't been around as long probably don't remember the days when the inmates came in and the shelter was a nice place to work. I'm not sure what changed, but it seemed to be that they would come in, the shelter would get clean. And I'm about to run out of time here. I could speak for a long time on this.
Sorry, unfortunately, your time is up, ma'am.
I know. I think we need to take a look at the shelter.
Thank you for your comment.
Now. Thank you.
That's our last request to speak on public comment. We'll move on to consent agenda.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, just two quick comments
in
response to matters brought up. On the matter of Sunny Acres, Mr. Duvall's property, various supervisors have met with Mr. Duvall fairly recently, but I think the thing for the public to understand at this point is that our county code enforcement officers are investigating the level of compliance of that property with the conditions of a board order and provisions of our land use ordinance. And so until such time as that enforcement action has been concluded, I think any further discussion of building permits and other future of that property it really has to be put on hold for the moment. And as to animal services, I appreciate the volunteers taking their time to come down here. Over the last few months, we have received reports from many volunteers about conditions at the shelter. And I would note that in our budget for 07, this budget year, 07 or 08, in addition to the work of our admin office working on means by which that operation can meet the standards that we expect of every county operation, we have also budgeted money for a peer review of the operation of the shelter. Mr. Edge informs me that his office is close to finalizing a contract with the Humane Society of the United States for a peer review that should start sometime in November. So just to know that we are aware of the issues raised and working on doing something about it.
Thank you. We'll move on to the consent agenda item. Open up for public comment. First speaker is Jan Campbell, followed by Tess Stapleton.
Jan said she was going to pass.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Tess Stapleton, and I am the president of the Board of Alpha Pregnancy Counseling and Support of San Luis Obispo. We are a part of the Beginnings Collaborative, and I want to thank you for recognizing the importance of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. We work with pregnant families, and we work to mostly to do prevention through awareness and education. I want to just thank you for your continued support. Additionally, you all were given the flashers, and this is something we use in our education outreach to try to reach a younger population that has not become pregnant yet, to inform them into prevention about the effects of alcohol, drugs, and tobacco on pregnancy. So. This is a website to go to. It leads you to a website that's brand new, just launched, and it's really dynamic. So hope you all can look at it. It's slow. Let's see. 90slow.org. So thank you.
Thank you. Before you sit down, Supervisor Asajjan has a comment.
Okay. You may sit down. My comment is I want to thank you all for coming here this morning, having served on or still serving with Ms. Bianchi on the board for MOCPOC. It's very important that we maintain the $100,000 coming to us from the Community Foundation year after year after year. I know that we have some level of misunderstanding that should have been in writing, but I'm hoping that everyone who's involved with any alcohol-related issues that impact the birth of children do get in touch with the Community Foundation and let them know how important it is for us to keep the doors open.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Phyllis Briota, followed by Linda Gendron. Having a hard time with names today.
Hello. You're pretty good. Thank you.
Thank you. And I apologize if I mispronounced
your name. That's fine. You did really well with it. Briota is the way to say it. Thank you. My name is Phyllis Briota, and I'm a member of Beginnings of San Luis Obispo County, and I'm here to talk about National Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Day. I first became aware of the effects of alcohol and drugs on children when I started working as a teacher in the Head Start program in 1988. I noticed that out of a class of 23 to 5-year-olds, there would be one or two children with serious behavior problems. It was difficult to engage them in typical preschool activities with the other children or get them to focus on any activity for more than a few seconds. They were disruptive and confrontational with the other children, and it was hard for them to make friends and keep them, and we had to constantly shadow them to make sure they didn't hurt themselves and the other children. Many of them often had language and cognitive delays, and when this was coupled with their social-emotional concerns, we knew they were going to have a difficult time in kindergarten and would need extra attention and care. In the early 1990s, I started attending monthly meetings at drug and alcohol services with therapists, educators, and other professionals who were seeing a sharp increase in the number of children with serious behavior issues. At the same time, the neonatal nurses at Sierra Vista were also reporting an increase in the number of infants being born exposed to drugs and alcohol. The realization that these two things were related is what drove us to form our Beginnings Group. We are committed to bringing awareness to San Luis Obispo County by educating, promoting, and preventing women from using drugs or alcohol when they first discover they are pregnant. It is our passion and hope that all children in San Luis Obispo County be given the chance for a healthy growth and development. And thank you so much for supporting our efforts.
Thank you for your comments. Linda Gendron, followed by Ruta Casabianca.
Thank you. My name is Linda Gendron, and I am here from the San Luis Obispo Child Development Center. And I'm also here as a member of the Beginnings Program. As the Child Development Center, we see the children that are affected every day by the drugs and alcohol in utero. We are committed to eradicating drugs in utero, and by doing so, even my youngest staff of 18 years old who are there trying to help these children that are sometimes so very damaged are out there as part of the 9-0 website. So I just want to tell you a little bit about some of those children. As Phyllis just mentioned, they're very damaged. They can't get along with other children. They have problems just adjusting from coming in off of the school bus every afternoon when they should be ready to go and just start playing or go eat or just simple functions. They have to have 10 minutes to adjust or longer sometimes. And that means that they need quiet time. They need to cool down because they just can't make a simple switch from getting off the bus to going to eat a meal. Our children really need the Beginnings Program and the 9-0 website to help educate the parents, the mothers that are pregnant, so that we can make sure that there's no longer any use of drugs, alcohol, and tobacco. And I thank you for your time and for your opportunity to help educate others to this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Ruta Casabianca, am I close?
My name is Ruta Casabianca, and I want to thank the first 5 Children and Families Commission for the support of Martha's Place and Beginnings, a coalition to prevent alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use during pregnancy. I adopted my daughter out of the foster care system when she was 8.5 years old. She is now 17.5. She suffers from severe anxiety and learning challenges. In 8th grade, she was known as one of the most high-maintenance children in her school. She is now studying independently. I have spent thousands of dollars, and you as taxpayers have spent thousands trying to help my daughter cope with her constant pain, anxiety, all of which is a result of her difficult beginning. I believe in prevention, and I'm very encouraged by the work of both Martha's Place and Beginnings. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Dale Gomer, followed by Ole Viborg.
Chairman Lenthal, Board of Supervisors, my name is Dale Gomer from Paso Robles Country Disposal. Just wanted to make a statement on our how imperative it is that we get our franchise agreement passed today. We have a few vehicles that are on order for the delivery for the implementation of our January 1 setup date, and would appreciate your support and approval of this agenda consent item. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Ole Vyborg, followed by Norma Moya.
I'm Ole Vyborg. Tom Madden was supposed to be here also today to speak, but he's attending the funeral arrangement of funeral of his close friends, Tom Vaughn. So my wife and I have known the Gomer family for ever since they came to Paso Robles some 40 years ago. We have seen how they conducted their business, and they collect from several of our buildings, including our, and they've done an outstanding job. Their trucks are always clean. Their business is clean and neat, and that's one thing that we appreciate. And all the drivers are always courteous, so we ask you to award the contract as presented. We think that it'll do us good, it'll do the community good, and we ask that you go forward with the. And as far as timing goes, it's very important. Our company just bought a new truck, and with the California new emission standards, it took forever to get them. So we need to give them time to get the trucks ordered so they can collect the green waste and have everything set up. So we encourage you to go ahead with the contract as presented. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Norma Moya, followed by Lester Rugo.
Rogan.
Supervisor Linthal.
Rogan.
Chairman and supervisors. My name is Norma Moy. I live on Vine Street in Paso Robles, California. I am here today to speak in support of the Dale Gomer Paso Robles County disposal. As the executive director of the Main Street program in Paso Robles, it is my responsibility to promote the economic vitality of our downtown. In this capacity, I have called on Dale Gomer many times for help during our promotional events, and he and his company has always, without exception, come to our aid. Through the years, Paso Robles Waste Disposal has provided waste collection and removal services for many of our downtown events. During the Vine Street Victorian Christmas Showcase, they have placed trash receptacles all along the street and removed them afterward without any charge. As this event is a gift to the community for everyone to enjoy, during the Ollie Festival and the free pancake breakfast in the city park, they bring a large dumpster for our use and take it away afterward, never sending us a bill. The Gomer family and their company has a 50-year history in Paso Robles. They are honest, they are hard-working members of our community who not only involve themselves in activities and events that benefit their town, but also provide good jobs for the residents. I strongly urge you to renew their contract and allow them to continue their tradition of excellent service and commitment to the communities they serve. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Lester Rogat, followed by Terry Schubert. Mr. Rogat, I also apologize for mispronouncing your name.
I'm Lester Rogat. I was a trustee of the 7X Youth Camp, and when I took it over, Gomer came out with his dumpsters, never charged us a cent to clean up the camp, and he also, for 15 years now, comes out and when we call him to pick up the garbage, and it's 17 miles from Spring Street and Paso Robles out there, and he's never ever charged us. And like Norma said about the events in town that we do, or barbecues, or chicken, or breakfasts. He has been there and has never sent us a bill for any of the garbage that's picked up, and we could call on him anytime we want to. I knew his mother and dad when they came here 50 years ago. In fact, I hauled their first tractor to their garbage dump. But anyway, I urge you to renew whatever they his contract. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Terry Schubert, followed by Marilyn Baldwin.
Chairman Linthal, members of the board, my name is Terry Schubert. I represent Pastor Robles Country Disposal and have had the honor of doing so probably for about 20-some-odd years now. I'm not going to repeat myself or repeat the things that I previously said. Simply request your approval of the agenda items B2 and B18. The contract that's before you has been worked on for approximately 2 years and will allow Pastor Robles Country Disposal to provide, to expand the recycling services that it already provides to county residents at a competitive rate, and will allow them to continue the job that they do well, and they've done well for many years, in a very community-minded spirit. Thank you very much for your consideration and your time.
Thank you for your comments. Last request I have is Marilyn Baldwin.
Who has the bundle of joy?
And friends and company, and associates.
Who actually could speak louder than Ole Vyborg.
Say again?
Supervisor Ovitz said that your child could speak louder than Ole Vyborg.
That's right, she can. My name is Mary Led Baldwin, and I'm from San Luis Obispo, 888 Mountain View. And I'm here to speak about infants and children exposed to alcohol. And I'm hoping the board and the community will learn more about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, and that they will continue to join Beginnings in Martha's Place in trying to help these children that have been prenatally exposed to drugs and alcohol. I'm a foster mom with more than 20, who's had more than 20 infants and children in my home. I've adopted seven children. Several of them have fetal alcohol syndrome and fetal alcohol effects problems. I have an adopted daughter and two sons, all experiencing the learning and behavior problems that go along with it. I have to constantly fight with teachers, people in the community, other parents, even friends, to have them understand the problems that my children are experiencing. It's very hard because very often their skill base is okay, but they're not moved up in any activity because of their behavior, their lack of attention, or their lack of focus. They don't sit real still and look perfect like the other kids, but they're absorbing information and they're doing well. But the constant fight to have people recognize who they are and what they're capable of is just really wearing. I just urge you to continue your work to try to help moms understand that when they are using any kind of drugs or alcohol and when they are pregnant, that it is doing damage, some of which cannot be fixed, and to urge the community to become more aware of these problems and to try to help with the objectives of Beginnings, and also to help with Martha's Place so that we're getting both ends. We're getting the children before, we're trying to prevent them from being born. We're also then trying to help the problems that are there for the children that are here, because we have so many of them here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And just for the record, would you introduce your guests for us, please?
Yes, this is Lily, and she's 10 months old, and she's been with me since she was born.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
That was our last request for public comment. We'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Supervisor Robert, any items?
Mr. Chairman, B2, it seems as I think Mr. Seebach was here, Mr. Estrada's here now, but we had made changes in that particular fee structure, and I just want to make sure those changes are in there. They're not in the document that we presented. I have informed Mr. Seebach. He says that once we pass this, he will make those changes, and the applicant understands those changes were as what we did before.
Anything else?
Unless there's a discussion on B18, I just have some comments on that. But nothing else.
Supervisor Patterson?
Comment on B18.
Supervisor Supervisor Asagian? None. Supervisor Gibson?
None, sir.
Supervisor, we'll start with B2.
Yeah, on B26, under the notes and additional information, under note 1, under the urban and under the rural section, it refers to 4 homes per acre. At our last meeting, we had changed that to 2 units per acre, which is equivalent to a half acre unit, so that we provide a greater scope of service level. As I said, Mr. Seaback is aware of this and will make those appropriate changes. We had made that recommendation at the last meeting, and it did not subsequently get into this. And I spoke to Mr. Schubert, and he also agrees. So in our motion, we can just add that as language within that.
Mr. Lindholm, are you comfortable with that as our
county
representative? Okay, did you want to make a comment on B18?
No, I was going to suggest that on B18, I don't have any reasons at this particular point to modify or change the franchise agreement. However, some issues were raised that I think this board may want to investigate into the future. And the reason I say into the future is because when we began all this franchise issues a number of years back, we had a different time frame, or we had a different thing happening. The franchise was, again, for waste and trash removal. We set, because we didn't really want to get into the bid process, we set performance standards as part of the bid process. Since that time, we now have added in recycling and green waste, which we did not have in the original franchise agreements, frankly, because it was very new and nobody had really gotten into it as much as they have today. The same issues were with flow control. So the difficulty I have in trying to make a determination on a specific franchise agreement today, I think, is worthy of, if this board so desires, sometime in the future, to begin discussion on these issues of whether we want to get into flow control, indemnification, all the other things that have now come up in these newer times, because we now find that most of the companies have their own or they're developing their own recycling facilities, many of these kinds of issues are coming up that I think we're going to have to be discussing in the future. But with that, I have no need at this point to change the recommendation.
Supervisor Asagian?
Thank you. Just to add another item on Supervisor Ovitz's vision for the future, that for us to treat all applicants the same way, I know that in total, both companies, as we spoke out, Mr. Goodrow last time, having 5+2=7, and this one having a 7 straight, that we need to treat everybody with a 7-year contract and without the option. Option can be past the 7th year.
Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to concur with Supervisor Ovitz's comments regarding how the contracts were let in the past and the establishment of performance standards in order for franchise haulers to just continue their contract. Waste disposal and resource recovery is becoming a much more complex issue. More services are being provided now, and as I understand it, in Sacramento, they're considering actually increasing the percentage of diversion that we have to make from our landfill. So I think in the future, we're going to need to be even more creative in how we manage our waste stream. And when we raised the issue 2 weeks ago when this was before us, there were some questions and ambiguities in the contract, and I'm comfortable with the way those have been addressed. Mr. Gomer and Waste Management have communicated with us on how those services are currently managed. And I do think, though, that in order to stay competitive, we do need to, in the future, think about putting these contracts out to bid and just ensuring that the public has the best service and the best price. And in the future, I think we need to at least consider that. But certainly I have no objection with the contracts that are before us today, and am prepared to support those because the questions that were raised 2 weeks ago have been adequately answered in my view.
Thank you. With that, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move the approval of consent.
Second.
I'll move approval of consent calendar. I just want to say one.
The amendments you mentioned earlier. Huh? With the amendments. And the
with the amendment on B2.
And as amended at the beginning of the meeting.
And the pink sheet, yes.
Thank you.
I wanted to mention one thing before I go too far. That 75% diversion was actually placed as a two-year bill, so it's been put in suspense. So hang on. We'll see what's going to come up with it in the future. But anyway.
Second concurs with the motion with the amendment attachment.
Yes, sir.
Motion by Supervisor Ovett. Second by Supervisor Gibson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ovett.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Linthal.
Aye. With that, we're going to take a 10-minute break and come back for probation.
Come back on probation?
I never got off.
Your microphones are live.
Well, we were waiting for you. It's 10:40, and we're going to do our best to be the third time where we've actually finished on time. I'm shooting for that. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Your next item is D1, a presentation of the Probation Department's performance profile.
With that, Chief Barrett, can I start off by saying I'm looking forward to your report, and I thank you again for the great things you and your department does, because you are a wonderful person to work with. Now, don't tell anybody I'm still on probation, okay?
On probation forever. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Linthal, members of the board. Kim Barrett, Chief Probation Officer. This morning I'm going to go through the Probation Department's Department Performance Profile. And we will start with the basic functions of probation. They're broken down into four areas: adult services, juvenile hall, and our administrative services. And you'll note in the parentheses are the numbers of cases, 3,500 adults, 959 juveniles, and we're proud that of those, 220 are diverted, 45 capacity for our juvenile hall. Our strategic goals are to provide timely and accurate reports, provide a safe and secure detention facility for juveniles for the county, supervise both juvenile and adult offenders, and make victims whole by collecting restitution for them. Our balanced scorecard shows that we are as cost-effective as possible, as good as possible, as responsive as possible, and as responsible as possible. On our cost effectiveness and our financial health, we maximize revenues through state and federal grants that we have. And we have a number of grants. I'm not going to go through all of those this morning. We also do a monthly budget review with our managers to ensure that we're on track with our budget. We monitor the changes in our revenue streams monthly. And are finding that we are able to deliver more services to the county with less general fund support by continually looking for state and federal funding. We also utilize the services of student interns and volunteers in the department. We've worked with Cal Poly and Cuesta for many, many years, and with volunteers in our juvenile hall as well as other places within the facilities. This graph will show you our general fund support versus our revenue comparisons. And as you can see, our revenues are going up and our general fund support has stayed fairly level. General fund support is 39%. We're very proud that we continue to reduce that. State funds, 35%. Federal funds, 14%. And the fines and fees that we collect, we get a portion of that funding, and that is 12% of our budget. As cost-effective as possible in our continuous improvement plans, this year we are implementing a validated risk and needs assessment tool, and this tool will help us to really determine at what level we need to supervise our offenders and what their needs are. We're also very involved in statewide advocacy. I'm president of the Chief Probation Officers of California this year. Our business manager is president of the Probation Business Managers Association, and we stay very involved so that we can look for those state funds and be involved in the state process. We have an annual strategic planning process. Right now we have a 3-year strategic plan, and I know that you board members have a copy of that. And we're also very involved in technology solutions. The probation department, as far as I'm concerned, has been behind in technology. And so we're looking at a new case management system. The RFP has already gone out for that, has been answered, and we expect to implement that system in this fiscal year. We're also working with the other criminal justice agencies on a criminal justice information system so that we can work more efficiently and better together in receiving information and thereby better services for our clients. On our internal business processes, quality assurance is very big for the probation department. We track a lot of deadlines to make sure that we get court reports in on time, budget reports in on time, correction standard authority reports, which we have many of, and grant reports. In addition, establishing goals and using performance measures to adjust our work accordingly. So we have stakeholder surveys. We look at our recidivism statistics and the restitution that we return to victims, and also our compliance with mandated training programs, looking at all of this to make sure that we're on time and that our internal business processes are working as they should. And this is just an example. I send a quarterly report to the administrative office showing where probation is at as far as our collections and our budgeting. And this report is much bigger than this, but I just wanted to give you an example so that we show the administrative office that we are on track with what we're doing. On our outcomes, we measure our outcomes in a number of ways. We have a stakeholder survey. Our last survey showed that 87% of our stakeholders rated us satisfactory or above. Our juvenile hall inspections, which we get inspected by 7 different agencies in our juvenile hall, and we are in compliance with all of those inspections. We're very proud of our recidivism rate. Our adult recidivism rate is 10.7%. And our juvenile is 4%. And if you compare that with the state's juvenile is 78% and adult is 58%. So we're very proud of the work that we do in the community. The restitution that we return to victims, I think, is extremely important. We've worked very hard over the last 4 years to make sure that we're returning more money to victims. And in fiscal year 06-07, we returned $923,000 to victims. We also have a victim satisfaction survey, and our average there is 4.13 out of 5 on a scale. So our victims are very appreciative of the work that we do with them as well. And again, that shows the state versus the county's recidivism rates. Our internal business processes, evidence-based practices is something the probation department has really been looking at over the past 2 years, so that all of the programs and services that we provide to probationers have evidence that show that, in fact, they work and that we're not just spending money out there, not sure whether or not that program actually will be effective for the probationer. Our juvenile hall population, we're continuously working to keep kids out of the juvenile hall and to release as many kids as possible. We have over 100 kids booked in the juvenile hall every month, and we keep an average of about 10 of those kids. So the others are sent out on home detention, or we do other reuniting with the family. So that keeps our population down, and the longer those kids stay at home, the better off that they are. Our caseloads are another area where we continuously struggle with high caseloads. Staff have gotten up to 150 per officer, and that's just too much to be able to do anything effective with. So our risk and needs assessment tool will help us in reducing those caseload sizes and ensuring that we're only supervising the highest need probationers. Right now, we've gotten our caseloads down to about 100 in adult and about 30 in juvenile. That's better, but we need to do better than that. And technology, again, is another area where we are continuously improving so that we become much more efficient in the work that we do. This shows our juvenile hall population trend, and as you can see, it is going up. 44 has been the average daily attendance, but we have gotten up to 60 kids in the juvenile hall. On a typical day, we've got around 50 right now, which means that we have kids on the floor sleeping on cots on the floor that they don't have a room to go into. And as you can see, in 2006, we exceeded our capacity for 77 days. Meeting the needs of our customers, we do an annual snapshot of probationers so that we know what language they're speaking, what is the age of our probationers, what are their mental health needs, their health needs, what region of the county are they coming from. And we take that snapshot, and then we change our course of business accordingly, whether that's recruiting more bilingual staff, what languages do we need, what is the age and what are the particular services that age of probationer needs. So that's been very helpful. We do a lot of bilingual and bicultural hiring. We have someone on duty at our juvenile hall 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that speaks Spanish, as well as at all of our front desks and our collections units and our intake units. Our community collaborations are really big. Probation is unique in the criminal justice arena in that we enforce orders of the court, but we also have to go about finding services for our clientele. So we do a lot of work with mental health, with Children's Services Network, Department of Social Services, criminal justice administrators, and we're on a lot of committees and boards. We're also involved in a lot of state and national organizations so that we keep on top of those evidence-based practices and those best practices nationwide. And our citizens' complaints, concerns, and compliments program, we get a lot of information from the community coming to us because we now have this on our website. That's been very, very helpful. We get lots of really good feedback, whether it's you need to do something different or we have, we're so thrilled with this probation officer and what they've done with this client. So we're happy about that program as well. As responsible as possible, our learning and growing, we have a very extensive training program and motivation and accountability with our staff. All sworn staff with the probation department have to receive 40 hours of standardized training for corrections. We well exceed that each year. All of our new staff at Juvenile Hall get 80 hours of orientation. By law, they only have to have 40, but we want to make sure they really know what they're doing before they get out there with the kids. In fiscal year 06-07, staff completed 9,916 hours of training. And all staff develop training goals at the beginning of each fiscal year, depending upon the unit that they're working in, so that they are very specialized, whether it's specialized in sexual abuse or gangs, or substance abuse, any of the specialized caseloads. Our training outcomes, again, we continuously meet all of our statewide training outcomes and goals. Staff satisfaction is measured in these course evaluations, and we also measure reduced service-related incidents, injuries, and complaints. And you'll note that our work-related incidents and injuries have gone down just a little bit, but we work on that continually to make sure that staff are safe, and most of the injuries occur out at our juvenile hall. Motivation, we have an internal leadership program It's taken off very well with the staff. Any staff that might be interested in moving up in the agency can become part of this leadership program. They're able to come to our management meetings. They have a mentor of a manager or a supervisor that works with them, and we've gotten great feedback on that leadership program. We do utilize the Covey principles in probation, seeking to understand, and many of them and all of our staff have gone through the Covey training. We also flex the schedules of staff as appropriate to assist in life balance. I believe that that's very important. We were losing a lot of staff to Santa Barbara County because of the pay, and we're now finding out that because we are more flexible with our staff, we're not losing staff like we were. So that's good news for us. We also are involved in participatory management in that we want and need to hear from staff about how things are working in the probation department and what their feedback is. So we don't just go from the top, but we work both ways. And praising coaching and mentoring, I think, is very important with staff. Staff have a very, very difficult job in probation, and we spend a lot of time working with them. And, of course, leading by example. Accountability. We have supervisors that proofread all court reports that go to the court. We do case conferencing and staffing on all juveniles that might be removed from their home. So we have a group that gets together and really looks at it and decides, does this child really need to be removed from their home? Is there some way we could maybe keep them at home? We've also implemented high performance management through our evaluation process, through the HR department, and again, implementing our best practices and programs. And, of course, staff are the ones that make it happen. These are just a couple of pictures of our staff at our Juvenile Services Center and up at our office on Johnson Avenue. Our staff are really great staff. They do a tremendous job with very difficult clientele that they work with and balancing what it is that they do. And that is the probation department's performance profile.
Thank you.
If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chief Barrett, for a very concise and informative report. As you know, I have my North County office and your probation office is in Atascadero, and I just want to comment that I've consistently been impressed with the caliber of officers that work there. They're great people, very dedicated to their job, and I can see why, in knowing them, you're performance information is so outstanding, especially relative to the state of California, the results yet, because I know the people are very dedicated to what they do. I'm wondering if you could answer a couple of questions and then maybe explain a couple of things to the people that are watching and listening that may not know about these programs. I did have an opportunity to tour your facility a couple of years ago and was very impressed with that as well. Recently, I did tour the county jail as well, and I know that there are a number of inmates there that are suffering from drug and alcohol issues, and there's also a huge number of incarcerated individuals that are suffering from mental health issues that exacerbate the problems out at county jail. And I'm just curious to know of people in your custody, how many have alcohol and drug issues and how many have mental health issues? Are they a severe problem? Of course, the people are younger that you deal with for the most part and probably less likely to be exposed to those things. But I do know they're an issue, and I'm just curious to know how much of an issue are they for you?
They are a big issue for us, and you mentioned that the youth in the juvenile hall are younger, and so it's very difficult to diagnose them because they may be coming up with a budding mental illness, but it doesn't exacerbate itself until they're 18 or 19 years old, so it's very difficult for our mental health staff, but we keep stats on this, and we have an average of 40% of the youth in the juvenile hall are either on psychotropic medication or have a diagnosed mental illness. In addition, the substance abuse issues are very, very big with the kids and adults that we work with. In juvenile hall in particular, I would say it runs about 95% of the kids that come into the juvenile hall have a substance abuse problem at some range. Of course, some are much more pronounced than others, but most of them have a drug or an alcohol problem.
Thank you. I've also had the opportunity to attend a program at their scholarship awards program that was started by one of your volunteers. Could you speak briefly about your volunteer efforts out at Juvenile Hall and yes. also that program in particular?
Yes. We pride ourselves in having volunteers at the Juvenile Hall, and we have at any one time about 15 or 20 different kinds of groups that come in and do presentations for the youth in the juvenile hall. The particular scholarship program that you're talking about came about as a result of a volunteer in the hall. And her name was Dorothy Ross, and she was actually a realtor in the community for years. And as she said to me, she didn't really like kids, but she wanted to do something. And somehow she got cajoled into coming into the juvenile hall. She didn't really know what to do with these kids, but she was a very good bridge player, so she started playing cards with the kids, and she talks about one young man that she sat down with, and he pretty much just spoke Spanish, so she asked him to teach her Spanish. She was an incredible human being, wanted to do a lot for kids in our county. Her life was cut short with cancer, and when she died, she told her daughter that what she wanted to do was give something back to the kids at Juvenile Hall. And so we have the Dorothy Ross Memorial Scholarship Fund. And each year we give three youth $1,000 each, and it's run through the Community Foundation. And we're very proud of that program and always happy to remember Dorothy every year.
Great.
Thank you.
And finally, I know that prevention is a part of what you do, and you have resource officers in the various schools. Can you just, again, speak briefly to that program?
Sure. I've offered to all the school districts to have probation officers in the schools to work with truant youth, because we know that if kids are truant, if they're not going to school, or if they're not successful in school, they're more at risk for delinquency. Lucia Mars School District and Atascadero School District have both taken us up on that. Lucia Mars lost their funding last year for us, so we're not there doing truancy anymore. But we are very involved with Atascadero Unified School District. And, in fact, they had one of our probation officers 2 years ago, and last year they added a second. So those are our truancy efforts in the school setting. And then, of course, our probation officers, as they're out in the field, are involved in the schools. We also have a probation officer at every community school site to work with the youth there. So we're in those schools as well.
Great. Thank you.
Thank
you. Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, Supervisor Patterson prompted the response that I was hoping to prompt. It was my pleasure to be at Loma Vista Community School when it was dedicated last week, and intersected Chief Barrett there and was really interested to learn that close interaction. I surmise that has something to do with your low juvenile recidivism rate, because that just seemed like a very positive track. And I think Dr. Crocker put it, helping kids get their life back on track and caught up and entering adulthood on a great footing. So I was really pleased to learn about that program.
Thank you. Thank you.
Chief Bear, if you can, I know high-tech and computer technology is everywhere. One of the things I think you did recently that I recall even got a state award for was, and I'll apologize for using the wrong term, but a probation officer, whether they had a caseload of 150 before and now is down to 100, it's really difficult to manage that caseload. You're out in the field, you're doing records, your checks and everything else, and you have some type of either PDA or computer-type personal computer thing that works. And this is an example, if you can just picture being that probation officer out in the field and having at your fingertips information that in the past you used to have to go to a phone, ask somebody to check up and things of that nature. I don't want to say it's revolutionary, but I think as far as one of the tools that you you can give a probation officer out in the field. It's one of the most significant. Could you just touch on that for a couple minutes, please?
Yes, thank you. Those are our IPACs, and that was a program that we got together with IT, and just as Chair Linthal said, our probation officers are out in the field, and unless they take cases with them or a laptop computer, all of the addresses that they're going to go to, what are the terms and conditions of the probationers. So these are all on an IPAC now, and they have that little IPAC with them, and they're able to go out in the field, look at what the address is, and even make the case notes once they do a field contact, and then they just come back and dock it at their desk and don't have to come back and write that somewhere else. So it's been very efficient, very effective, and IT did get a statewide award for probation and IT with that product. It's been very good. Thank you for bringing it up.
There's no more comments. I guess I'm going to close because I was teasing you a little bit about being on probation. I think we all are in some form or another. But I would be remiss, I think, if I didn't say, at least from my perspective, and obviously I'm biased because I spent almost my entire adult life now in law enforcement, that our probation department has never worked better and been more effective, efficient, effective financially, and just the work that you've done I think is commendable. And I want to thank you and your staff because I can't say enough good things about the probation department. It's a thankless job. They don't get a lot of the publicity. They're not the front line out there when you think in law enforcement, but they are the backbone to any criminal justice system and keeping our society somewhat in check. And I thank you for the work you do.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the board's support of the department. We appreciate it.
Thank you. No actions required on this. So, Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Your board's next item is C1, a hearing to consider an appeal by Philip De Silva of the Planning Commission's decision to approve a request by the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship for a conditional use permit, DRC 2005-00276, that would allow a phased development of an 11,000-square-foot religious facility located at 6445 Edna Road in the Edna Los Ranchos Community 3rd District. This item was continued from June 5, 2007. Request the item be continued to a later date to prepare an environmental impact report.
Ms. Griffin, are you going to lead off?
I am. I don't have that much to say. The applicant did request the item be continued off calendar.
Tammy
Griffin, County Planning, in order for them to prepare an environmental impact report. And that's the request before you today, is to go ahead and continue this off calendar to allow the time necessary to prepare the environmental impact report.
Okay. Any additional staff comments? I'll open to the public. I received no request to speak on this. Is Mr. Silver, are you representative? Do you want to make a statement now?
I may, very briefly. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. Michael Jenks, attorney for Philip De Silva, the appellant in this matter. I did deliver a letter yesterday. I'd like to make sure it was received by all of you and by the board clerk. Just briefly, it applauded the decision to proceed with an EIR. It did procedurally question whether an indefinite off-calendar continuance was the appropriate way to go. But I can either summarize the letter at greater length, but that I just, for the record, wanted to say that was our position.
I'm sorry, I have not seen the letter. Well, my colleagues have or not, or I believe the clerk has it, but...
Yeah, we very, very briefly, again, we indicated that, as you know, the an EIR was one of the three or four major issues we had raised in the appeal. We thought it was necessary then. We still think it's necessary on the basis of the revised mitigated negative deck. And I think it's a good move, and it'll sort out some of the issues on the project. It doesn't dispose of all the issues. But from our viewpoint, it's really just a procedural question we raised, and we provided a copy to County Council, the clerk, and each of you, or each of your respective offices. We just questioned whether an indefinite continuous off calendar, especially when I read in the paper that staff's quoted as indicating that process may take a year or more, is procedurally appropriate. That is, to leave this appeal hearing open for that length of time, as opposed to essentially deciding it, affirming the appeal at least as to the CEQA issues, remanding to the Planning Commission, which I think under your rules and under the way things go and their experience might be better suited to do the initial vetting of the EIR, and it would preserve your appellate status if there were issues any party or member of the public had. I'm not going to beat that to death, but that was the essence of our letter. And I'll be glad to answer any questions, but otherwise we're glad to see an EIR go forward. I think there's some significant issues that should help reduce or see if there are mitigations that can be fashioned. Thank you.
Thank you. And before I open to the public, Mr. Lindholm or Ms. McNulty, do you want to respond to the appropriateness of having something off calendar for a time period? I recall that we've done this before, but certainly I don't know the legal reasons why.
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. I have reviewed Mr. Jenks' letter of September 10th, and I think that the procedure that's been suggested by the staff is certainly appropriate. On the other hand, if the board wanted to do as Mr. Jenks has suggested, that is, send the entire project back to the Planning Commission, then you would follow his recommendation and you'd make a determination on the appeal and then send the project off for an EIR and back to the Planning Commission and then back to here. You can do either one. Staff is proposing that you the project go off, an EIR be prepared, and that the project come back to the Board of Supervisors.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson?
Mr. McNulty, since the Planning Commission did not have the opportunity to review the EIR, would we have to send it back to them for that review, and then it would have to come back to us?
Unlike ordinances and general plan amendments that we've been discussing recently, these individual projects don't necessarily need to go back. I think the board has the option of doing either one.
Thank you. Supervisor Robert?
Yeah, it's my understanding that even if by going this off calendar, it still has to be re-noticed and everything else before it comes back up so that the neighborhood would again be notified well in advance of this.
Yes, once we go off calendar, we'll have to do all the noticing over again.
Seeing no other lights or requests from board members, I'll open to the public. I did receive one request to speak. Mr. Eric Greening.
I'm Eric Greening, and I'm certainly not speaking in any formal or official capacity, but as a Unitarian Universalist, the existence of such a letter is news to us. We had a congregational meeting on Sunday, and nobody in the fellowship said anything about such a letter. So certainly, if there is a letter out there, it would be good to have that in the hands of our president, our board, our pastor, etc. I will say that the intent is not to have any Class 1 impacts left out there unmitigated. In other words, this is not the intent to do an EIR so that we can get away with having Class 1 impacts. The intent is to do an EIR so that the community has another opportunity to raise its concerns through the public comment period, and so that the all possible impacts are going to be mitigated to a level of insignificance. And I see a member of our board here, so that's all I have to say. But none of us have seen any letter. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Osborne, I don't know if you want to comment or public comment, or as the applicant, if you want to wait till I come back to you, because we started before you got here. It's your choice, sir. So, you have a little more time as the applicant if you need more than.
Go now. I mean, there's no other public out there.
Okay, well, Orville Osborne, and I'm on the Board of Trustees of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Sorry I was late here. I agree with the comments I heard Eric Greening make. We are convinced that our project will have really a negligible environmental impacts. However, due to the course of events, we've realized that we have to disprove this, and after evaluating our options, we've realized that if we perform an environmental impact report, then we'll just prove this, we'll just settle all the questions, and then we'll be able to proceed with building our little church out on Highway 227. I'm open to any questions that you may have at this time.
Thank you for your comments. I don't see any questions right now. We'll close public comment, bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chairman, unless you want to make the motion yourself,
go ahead.
I'll move that this item be continued off calendar.
I'll second.
Thank you. This is a voice item moved by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Patterson.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify one point, I think it's probably clear, but just like to stress the fact that this is being continued off calendar and will be re-noticed, but when it's re-noticed, that will be for a continued appeal. So we will just picking up where we were before, and the only difference from any other procedure suggested is we're simply not going to continue it to a date certain, but everybody's rights will be held intact, and we'll just have additional information with respect to the environmental impact report.
Is that the motion maker's understanding?
And intent.
Second concur?
And intent, yes.
And intent. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Madam Clerk, introduce the next item, please.
Your next item is E1, a request to review the August 7, 2007 board action regarding the appeal of SunCare Foundation of the requirement for payment of public facilities fees for two residential units and to provide direction to staff, 3rd District.
Mr. Jensen, are you going to lead off here?
I'm going to try, Mr. Chairman. Pinch hitting for John Bissell is taking some well-deserved time off. Matt Jansen, planning staff. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This item is here in front of you today as a referral, if you will, from yourself to staff regarding the question of whether you want to reopen a hearing on the SunCare public facility fee appeal or not. As you will remember, on August 7th, you held a hearing regarding those public facility fees, and your board upheld the appeal with a deferment of the fees based on a finding that we came up with regarding the facility serving county residents. On August 28th, 2 weeks ago, you heard some testimony during public comment from the facility operator, I believe, that he would like you to reinvestigate, if you will, reopen the idea of whether that specific finding about county residents could be changed or not. And so the purpose of today's discussion is for your board to decide whether you want to reopen that hearing or not. This is not the hearing. And if you decide to reopen the hearing, I would strongly suggest that you give us at least 6 weeks to prepare the notice for that hearing and to prepare the staff report for that hearing. And finally, staff sees your options, at least two options. One is to do nothing, to leave the previous decision on August 7th in place and leave the previous findings in place, or number two, decide that the operator's argument deserves further discussion and renotice a new hearing on the item. I'll try to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions from board members for Mr. Jensen?
So, no, Mr. Jensen, we have to reopen the entire hearing rather than discuss one item that wasn't to their satisfaction?
That's staff's recommendation at this point, that we not try to do it in this venue. That what you did 2 weeks ago was refer it back to staff.
Right.
Sorry for the repetitiveness, but it's a formal step we need to take as to whether you need to reopen the hearing or not, because on August 7th, You came to a final decision, so today is not the reopening of that hearing.
So what can we legally can do or we should do?
I will look to my left for the answer to that
question. Union says
Mr. Lindholm, Mr. McNulty, who would run?
Well, you don't. The decision can be postponed if you decide to move this to another day, but the decision today is do you want to simply leave your previous decision standing after giving the appellant an opportunity to address you, or do you want to have a new hearing and then explore what your options are? And your basic options, an issue for the board, is whether you can make the required findings to provide the relief requested. And as you know, that's been a controversial point with respect to both past actions and contemplating future action here. That's simply a matter that the board doesn't have to deal with today. And if you decide to proceed on another date, you can deal with those issues on that date. And if that answers the question.
Yes, sir. We'll move on to public comment. I received one request to speak from, I believe, the applicant also, Mr. Jack Gould. And if you need more than 3 minutes, because since you're the applicant, we'll budge either way. just trying to move efficiently here. So with that, please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, gentlemen, Madam Clerk, my name is Jack Gould, Director, Founder of SendCare Foundation. This actually won't take very long. What is in question here, and this would have been addressed originally, but there was a kind of an oversight for the ability to speak on it at the original time, so we've kind of complicated the process now. We agreed with the board and with the planning department that these fees could be deferred, and these are public facility fees totaling about $9,000, and that they would be deferred if the purpose for which we use the ranch, which is a nonprofit mentoring program, we've been there 9 years, that these fees would be deferred into the future. They're not waived, they're not given away. But what happened is there are four words we could not agree to, and that didn't get back before the board. So that's why I've been here three times now. And the words on your page, I think it's page 2 of 3 of your exhibit today, there are two paragraphs, and these words appear three times in the two paragraphs, which I'll just read the first one and not the others, but it says the two residential units will be used only in support of a nonprofit self-help residential care facility, 6 residents or fewer, and then it adds serving existing county residents. And that is way too restrictive for us. In the history we've been here in all these years, we've never been restricted to just existing county residents. We have never turned away a single county resident, and we have never been full. Currently, we have a county resident who joined us the end of last week from Los Osos. We have a gentleman who's with me today who joined us actually from Riverside County. And so we're open to serve whoever needs the help. It doesn't create additional burdens on the county. In fact, you've had a lot of testimony today on probation and fetal alcohol awareness and a lot of these things, and we feel we're a real part of that, and I'm sure Chief Barrett would back that up, that we help probation when we can, we help the community schools and that kind of thing. So we feel we're offering actually quite a contribution to the county financially, even in savings. And we're just asking that this money to actually be enough to furnish the two manufactured housing units that are now on the property and set up. And we have already actually paid the fees in order to get our permit, and the agreement was that we could consider getting those fees refunded. So that's why I'm here before you today to just ask to remove those four words, serving existing county residents, and answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions from board members? Mr. Gould, Supervisor Sasha?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Mr. Gould, if you were fully occupied, would you then at least give priority to local residents?
We would not have a problem with that. We have had as many as 3 or 4 county residents at once, but we've never had to turn away a single one.
Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson?
And Mr. Gould, just in summary, roughly how many young men have been through your program?
Probably in the neighborhood of 70 to 80.
Mm-hmm. And when they leave their program, what in general has become of them in terms
sure.
of where they go, what they do, that sort of thing?
We have had folks who have gotten scholarships. We had one recently graduate from Point Loma College. We have 2 in the military in Iraq right now. We have 1 at the Citadel School in North Carolina on a scholarship. We have had some go to mechanics school. We have had some go into family businesses. What we try and do is tailor our program to help them develop a plan that best meets them and their personal skills and needs for the future. Employment, housing, all of those things before they leave our program.
Mm-hmm. And do many of them settle in this area?
It varies. Typically, the local folks do. Probably most of the time, the folks who come from out of the area may go somewhere else.
Okay, thank you.
Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gould, how are people recruited to your facility? Last time you were here, you talked about having a young man from Hawaii, and I understand you just received or are about to receive a new individual from Utah. How do folks find out about your facility?
We get calls from all kinds of places. We'll get a call from probation. We'll get a call from parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts. We don't really do any advertising. We have a website that people find us on sometimes. So there's just a multitude. We don't particularly target any particular area or type of referral. Because of a small program, it's all word of mouth, and we really don't recruit because we're such a small program.
What's your capacity now? How many young men?
Six.
Six?
Yes, sir.
And how many people do you currently have enrolled in your program?
Today we have three.
Three.
And yes, sir.
What is their residence of origin?
We have one from Los Osos. We have a gentleman here today whose home is Riverside County. And we have another gentleman there from Florida.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Gold, I mean, mine is a comment as well as a question. I know we've had some discussions, and I apologize for the miscommunication on a day where we had a real hectic agenda. Because some things were supposedly going to happen at lunch hour, and they did or didn't for whatever reason. The issue I have is that if no one is turned away from this county, I don't have a problem with the geography that says you're helping people, because that's what we do all the time. I mean, we have all sorts of homes and processes where people go. So this is not just a countywide program that has a deal with countywide issues or people that have problems that live here. With the understanding that if you were up to that fifth level and the next person to walk through the door, yay or nay, was a local person or not, I'm comfortable as long as no local person doesn't get turned away. I'm not implying that they should have preferential treatment, but I do think we need to make a statement to take care of our own backyard first. And so as long as that's not the problem, I don't have a difficulty with this, and I wish you luck and ask for the support of my colleagues. With that, anyone want to make a motion?
Well, we're going to close public, and yeah. I got a quick question.
Mr. Gold, we really didn't have anybody from public comment. Yeah. He spoke, and I gave him extra time as the applicant. So we'll bring that back. Supervisor Obit?
No, I think that whoever makes a motion can make it specific to the point of that we deal with a residency qualification during. We're not going to reopen up the whole thing. We're going to only reopen that portion of it.
Do we have to reopen it, or can we handle it here today?
My thought would be I can make the motion, and I'm sure I hear the rest of the board that we want to change that residency issue without having to go to a rehearing on it.
Mr. McNulty, did you want to jump
Thank
in
you.
Before Supervisor Gibson?
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office, and our advice is that you do instead schedule this for a future hearing where you can change the finding and the result of the previous hearing that you had on this issue. I realize that it seems like there might be either consensus or at least a majority of the board to take the action that you want to take, but what happened was you held a notice public hearing, you made findings, you reached a conclusion, and in order to undo that, you need to open that hearing back up and do it again.
How was this advertised as a hearing here today?
This wasn't, because this was just the board's decision to decide whether or not to hold a hearing. So, but your previous action was.
Supervisor Gibson?
Yeah, let me ask a question of staff at this point. Is the fee waiver specifically tied to this condition? By that I mean Mr. Gould indicates he's paid his fees. If you just kept his fees and didn't refund him anything, is he free to go ahead and does this condition of only serving existing county residents come into play, given that he hasn't received the fee waiver?
It shouldn't. John Euphrat, planning staff. No, I think he's fine. I mean, I don't know if he's actually picked up the permit yet, but you know, this finding was relating to an agreement that we were going to work with Mr. Gould on, and that ultimately recorded against the property to alert the organization.
This operation can go on forward as is.
I don't think there'd be any problem in operating.
Let me offer a suggestion and see with staff if it can work within this thing. We're trying to do something reasonable here. We absolutely acknowledge the benefits of your program. I think there is the making of the finding that we're required to make is a difficult one based on what we've heard. But a couple of things I know. One of them is that within your program is a revenue source, the kennels that you run on site.
Yes.
And I think it's reasonable to say that individuals coming through your program are likely to, as likely as not, there's a possibility they're going to settle in this county, where those residents would have impacts on the public facilities of this county. In terms of doing something reasonable, my thought is, what if we went ahead and asked you for those fees, but that those fees could be paid out over an extended period of time, 10 or 15 years. If it were 10 years, it's about $900 plus a year, offset by your revenue source. I wonder if within the system that the planning department has set up, whether we could adjust the fees paid, and then you can invite whoever you want to the program. Doesn't seem to be an undue financial burden to you to spread it out over 10 years with it payable in lump if you have to go. But that would be a side agreement, or an agreement, agreement between you and the planning department.
I don't think we can make it any more complicated than we can make it.
Yeah, let's just say it's going to get paid over 10 years.
I think the issue that we're discussing is a point of not as to whether we want a residency requirement. And right. We've already concluded that we would go ahead and put a lien on the property for the fees, and they're paid at a specific point. We try to rewrite that all over again, we're going to get a more deeper.
Right.
And you know, I think the issue here is the quickest and cleanest way is to go ahead and rehear the thing, make the change in the language, and get it done. I'd like to do it now, but it seems like County Council will not let us do that.
Mr. McNulty, I know you've been patiently waiting.
I was just going to say if there's support for Mr. Gibson's proposal, that I would want to talk about that, but if there isn't, then I don't need to.
Yeah.
What dates do we have available?
Your board's calendars are quite full. November 20th is the first meeting in 6 weeks. It has no time available, but the other meetings have negative time.
How much time does staff require to publicize this?
They asked for 6 weeks, I believe.
John Euphrat, 6 weeks would be ideal.
So November
to slightly
November
sooner,
20th.
But
November 20th complies with that window.
Sure.
We have that, Mr.
Gould.
Does that work for you, sir?
November 20th.
Yes,
I believe so.
Mr. Chair, I move that we rehear this item on November 20th.
I would second that and specify that it's concerning the language of residency.
And before I do that, under discussion,
we got to reopen the entire can, don't we, by rehearing it, Mr. Jansen?
Mr. Chair, I think Supervisor Shodgin's motion should be to reopen the hearing on the Sun Care public facility fee appeal.
Period.
Okay.
That's what I meant.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Supervisor Shodgin, second by Supervisor Robert. Supervisor Patterson, under discussion. You had your light on here, sir.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment, and I'll be brief because we'll have an opportunity to do it again. But when this was before us before and we had this discussion, I thought that our understanding was that there needed, in order for us to waive the fees, there needed to be a nexus, that a benefit had to occur here in San Luis Obispo County, because these fees are to cover the cost of providing services to the county. And we have such a need here in this county, whether or not, you know, it's materialized, maybe with more public outreach and education so people know that you're there. We would have more folks coming from San Luis Obispo County. In my mind, that was the nexus that we had to have in order to waive the fees. Mm-hmm. There, I applaud your efforts. I know Rob, and we've talked about your program a lot, and I know you do great things, and I think we need more of those. But there are a lot of great programs out there, and when we start waiving fees for one, then what keeps us from needing to or being requested to waive them for other very worthy programs. That's my concern. I think in order to be able to waive those fees, we have to show a local benefit. And I thought that was the agreement when we adopted this initially, and I thought my colleagues were on board with that. I mean, it was under those terms, and I thought that you had agreed to that and we were moving forward. But
no,
at any rate, I just wanted to make that comment up front.
Sure. May I just say one thing about that? I'm kind of puzzled that we're not seeing the nexus. I'm sure that what we're doing And I won't go into the individual. We have a gentleman who's with us now who is in some other county programs. And what we're doing is saving the county much more money than this $9,000. The nexus is there. We're just saying for $9,000, we're not willing to give the county exclusive access to our program. It's a private program. We've never gotten a dollar from the county, the state, the federal government, or anyone else. We have funded this. We work hard for it. And we're not willing to say for $9,000, you're the gatekeeper and only existing county residents can come. That's not fair to us. We are contributing tens of thousands of dollars worth of services to the community schools, to the probation department, and to others through what we're doing. So the nexus is pretty clear, I believe, but apparently I haven't communicated that well.
Probably the next public hearing will be important for us then to hear from probation officer here publicly as what are the benefits in order for us to connect ends and make it.
Certainly I can do that.
Thank you, Mr. Gold.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We have a motion by Supervisor Asaji and second by Supervisor Obit. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
May I clarify the motion?
Yes.
You're actually not continuing the hearing. You're actually reopening the hearing of appeal and setting the hearing date for November 20th?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Lindvall?
Aye. Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Your board's next item is F1, a submittal of a resolution establishing requirements for financing maintenance of new streets and roads constructed by subdivisions. This item is continued from August 14, 2007. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Mr. Marshall, are you presenting the staff report?
Thank you, Supervisor Lenthal, members of the board. I am Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. On August 14th, your board adopted Resolution 2007-316, establishing some new requirements regarding the acceptance of new streets and roads constructed by subdivisions and establishing some new requirements for financing the maintenance of those streets and roads. At that time, you directed us to return on this date with clarification of one particular element of that proposal, and we have worked together with staff from the Department of Planning and Building and returned today with that clarification in hand. It's presented in the staff report and hopefully is sufficiently clear, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Marshall from board members?
Just a couple, if I might.
Yes, sir.
Looking at the resolution on establishment of the financing mechanism, page 6 of our staff report, the developer of any new public street or road which is to be accepted into the county-maintained system shall be required to establish a service charge, and procedures for service charge establishment shall be developed by the Department of Public Works. Where is that process? When are we going to see that as a separate item at some point?
No, that's a just an implementation of existing law. We have the procedure essentially already ready because we've been using the exact same mechanism for the financing of drainage basin maintenance. And in fact, one thing I've learned recently is that when we do this for street maintenance, it'll actually be one step simpler. The flood control district zone of benefit that we use for drainage maintenance is not countywide, so we have to do a step called annexing the land to the zone.
Right.
The CSA we're going to use for road maintenance is countywide, and so we don't have to do that step. The rest already works the way we've already developed.
And you have a number then ready to go for so many feet of new road.
It's, got it right
it's all right there. Okay.
Actually, the figure is $23,000 a mile. That was part of our initial presentation to your board.
Okay.
Per year, yes.
And then my other observation is in the paragraph below, you have a table. Column E says the number of star points to qualify for maintenance finance exemption.
Right.
But the words above say that the public street or road in the project which receives more points than shown in column E. So there seems to be a conflict with the labeling of column E. We want it to achieve at least this many points, I would think.
Okay.
Is that I defer to your assumption.
It's inadvertent. Let me think about it a moment and fix it.
Okay.
Yeah. Supervisor Patterson, question for Mr. Marshall.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marshall, referring to the Table 1 on F-16, I got a good explanation. I was trying to make sense out of what it said, and it didn't explain anywhere exactly how to compare the table, and I was concerned that they only needed to receive 8 points minimum, and I was looking at the total available points as 28. And what we're doing with D and E is we're comparing E with D. There's actually only 13 points possible related to the roads. And I just want to be sure that when we're all gone in the future and this is being utilized, people will realize when they read this that it's 8 of 13, not 8 of 28. And it doesn't really say that anywhere. And I wanted to try to be sure that that was clear to folks, that we weren't giving away the farm with this. It's, they've got to comply with 18 of 13, or excuse me, 8 of a possible 13 points.
Mr. Marshall, did you want to respond to that, or is there an easy? Does the print need to be bolder? Is that a footnote? Is that something you think is?
The language that responds directly is in the staff report. Let me think for a moment about whether some of that maybe would serve well by moving into the resolution itself.
It was very clear when it was explained, but until it was explained,
I think your point is good, that that explanation needs to outlive us. So I will work on that as well.
Thank you. We'll open public comment. I received no request to speak on this item. Close public comment. Bring back to the board. Or Mr. Marshall, anything that you wanted to add? You've had another 30 seconds to think. Come on. Not that we're trying to rush you, sir.
I fixed the first one.
And we're glad you did, by the way. And if you need another minute, we'll give you a minute or two to fix
it.
Do you want to bring it after to think about it over lunch?
Maybe that would be good. If you
Let's continue this hearing to this afternoon when Mr. Marshall is ready to come back with some clarifications.
Shall I come before the Los Osos item or after?
Yes, sir. Right. You'll be right on deck at 2 o'clock.
I'll be here.
Supervisor Rowlett, did you have a comment?
Well, I still have very big apprehensions about putting the cart before the horse. And the reasoning is that I don't think we've ever stopped to take a look at the smart growth principles, which, you know, I'm not arguing about those, but it's the application of them and where they're going to be applied. Many of these points and credits you're going to give for road reductions are in areas where they don't have some of the facilities you already are asking about, nor are the plans for them to be built. So they couldn't even qualify, even though they are participating in the quote-unquote smart growth principles. My only thing in this before and asking this to be run separately is because we need to get defined, and I think we need to look at the overall as to what is smart growth going to do for a community, and where is it going to be applied? If I look at the areas, two specifically in North County, there's no road maintenance issues going to ever show up because it's already on existing roads. Where they're going to be built, they are within the community business district. They're going to do all these things. In another case, we're actually going to go out and have to design a business district because there is no business district. So I just feel I cannot support it at this point because I don't think that we yet have gotten to the point of understanding of how the relationship is going to work between these things, because we really haven't defined what the outcome of the smart growth principle is going to be on the communities where we're going, the only communities that we really have that they're going to be applied to. Other than that, if we do it in existing communities that are in the unincorporated area, it's a redevelopment agency that would, you know, it's almost a redevelopment to the whole community in order for it to qualify for these things. So that's my personal opinion.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Supervisor Ovett that there are a lot of issues to see the actual implementation of smart growth occur. But if you look at what we're being asked here in terms of waiving road maintenance fees, I had some of the same concerns as he did when we first heard this. But I thought staff did a fine job going through those pieces of the smart growth principles that related to roads. You know, if you do this, then I think they did establish the nexus that the load on our road system would be relieved. And so I think they've done a fine job establishing the nexus that would allow us to waive. And the point system seems pretty straightforward to me.
I just have a point of argument with that, and that's why I said that nobody's actually looked at the outcomes. Where we're going to apply these principles and what is the actual outcome, you know, I consider and argue with why did you make it a quarter mile, not a half mile? A half mile is not that far to walk. And if you're going to make walking communities, you can build these with inside those kinds of areas. The other situation is that when you take an inventory of the communities we have and where we have the capability of applying smart growth principles, these facilities that will be built, and I know the ones that are on the boards now, are not going to reduce traffic because they're not for the whole community. We're only applying it in a specific portion of a community. And the issue is, as I said, in one community, there is no grocery store for them to walk to. Whether there's going to be one built or not, I mean, these are points of where and how are you going to build these things that are going to make a difference on the roads. If you're going to redesign and build a whole new community, that's different. But even if I sit down this morning and I try to imagine Cayucas, you know, if you can build in Cayucas, you know, you'd have to go back and redevelop the whole core area in order to make any of these standards happen.
Well, I think that in the, you know, if you're looking at the complete picture of transforming our built environment into a smartly designed environment, yes. I think the question of this one exemption, waiving it or not waiving it, it's going to be years before we know whether that was a good, whether that was a financially perfect move, whether we got the return that that we expected. But I think there's reasonable cause to go ahead with this as one of the incentives toward moving these smart growth principles into practice. I think it's it is probably going to be well beyond our tenure here before we really know whether whether this has achieved all the results that we're hopeful that it would.
And I'm not going to belabor it any longer. I'm just thinking the reverse side of this says that if you're going to do anything for quote unquote housing issues that are going to be out here, we're not giving incentives to that either. Whether it be multifamily or whatever we want to call it, the issue is that we keep stacking things on top of these others, and the cost factors are not going to be the benefit. And that's my issue with this is that I don't think we went enough to understand what the outcomes are going to be.
Mr. Chair, will we continue this item at 2 o'clock this afternoon with the clarification of the languages?
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Assange, second by Supervisor Patterson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, Mr. Marshall. We'll see you right at 2:01, right after closed session. Mr. Lindholm, would you brief us on closed session, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The board's about to go into closed session on about half the items listed on the agenda, so it should not be as long a closed session as some might have anticipated.
And how long is your estimation, sir?
In excess of 20 minutes.
Yeah. Thank you. We'll open for public comment. I received no slips before we go into closed session, so we will close public comment, and we'll see you at 2 o'clock. Mr. Edge, we almost made it.
Now you should be good.
You ready to do
this? Okay, if we can come back to order, good afternoon, and welcome to the 2 o'clock session. Mr. Jensen, would you like to report out of closed session?
Yes.
I think you need to push your button first. Right, red, green, go.
Yes, the board did meet in closed session on the items on the agenda. Took no final action, therefore no further report is required.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you reintroduce F1 because we have some housekeeping we have to take care of before we go on to our next item that was held over from before?
Certainly. Item F1 is the submittal of a resolution establishing the requirements for financing maintenance of new streets and roads constructed by subdivisions.
Mr. Marshall, I appreciate you working diligently through your lunch hour. I know that you were able to accomplish everything that we asked you to and then some.
Thank you, Supervisor Lenthal, members of the board. Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I appreciate the extra time to address your board's concerns, and I think we did come up with a good result. For your convenience, it's printed on green paper, so it won't get lost among the other things on your desk. We propose that your board adopt the attached resolution to the staff report with the replacement of its paragraph 2 with the material that's on the green sheet.
Are you going to open up to the public, or?
I was just reading it for the first time. I'm sorry.
Could you put one up on the screen, please?
Sure.
Good idea.
Good idea, Rick. Thank you.
There's got to be an on button.
It's on.
It's warming up.
That's perfect.
Here, Eric. Go ahead, I got it.
Mr. Marshall, for those that are listening and not able to see this, or perhaps those on television that have a hard time seeing that screen, could you summarize the changes or the wordsmithing just a little bit so we'd all have a better understanding, I think?
Happy to. Previously, the proposed resolution simply said, if you get a certain number of points in column E on the table, you would be exempt from the service charges, from the establishment of service charges. Now we've taken some of the language that appeared previously only in the staff report and added it to the body of the resolution, so it says more about what the points are, where they appear in the attachment, and how we will conduct this evaluation and determine the number of points to make that determination. So it's in more of a cookbook format.
Thank you. Mr. Jensen, your light was on. Was that from earlier?
Yeah.
I apologize for that. Any questions from board members of Mr. Marshall or the changes?
Mr. Chair, I move we approve the staff's recommendation with the changes.
Second.
Forward this afternoon.
Moved by Supervisor Asajjan, second by Supervisor Gibson. Any discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Asajjan.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Ovitt.
No.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Lenthal.
Yes. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Your next item is G1, an update on the Los Osos Wastewater Treatment Project, 2nd District.
Give everybody a chance to get set up.
Yeah,
is there any technical information you need to put on?
Or? Mm-hmm.
You're gonna have the camera will probably go to sleep, so you'll have to. Okay.
And who would like to start off? What was it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Mark Hutchinson with the Department of Public Works. We have an update this afternoon focusing on the progress of our 218 efforts and also reporting out on some of our long-term planning efforts. John Diodati will handle the 218, and I'll give you an update of where we are on some of the issues that the project presents to us. You'll recall that at your meeting on August 14th, your board provided some direction on future work efforts. I'd like to update you on where we are with at least one of those. You'll recall that we have three major tasks that will have to be accomplished in 2008. Those include the community survey, the design-built effort on the collection system, and the one near and dear to my heart, the environmental review process. These will all have to be done concurrently and coordinated with each other because, to a large extent, they each depend one on the other. The one key work effort that we're making good progress on right now, believe it or not, is the EIR, providing your board and the public with a document that contains all of the information necessary to sort through some very complex issues with this project and then be able to choose between all kinds of different combinations of options and alternatives is a significant challenge. We're also aware that there's a wealth of information out there already developed, already paid for, that is relevant to the environmental process, including three previous full EIRs. So our challenge is going to be to produce an EIR that fosters public discussion, but at the same time is not so overwhelming that it becomes unmanageable both to the agencies involved, including us, and also to the public. So the first step in achieving this result is we're going to be assembling the best possible team to produce this document, both within the budget and the time frames that we've established for it. Our approach is to engage the environmental consultant community in two ways, and that's what's ongoing right now as we speak. First, we're in the process of forming a new environmental management team comprised of myself and then the principals from two local environmental firms, CMCA and the Morrow Group, both of which have extensive experience in Los Osos. Both of those happen to already be under services contracts on a standby basis, so we're initiating conversations with them about the scope of work that will allow us to access their expertise, also their extensive experience in Los Osos. They've worked not only on previous EIRs, but also on the Habitat Conservation Plan and numerous technical studies that have been there. Secondly, we need to be accessing the experience in the larger environmental consultant community that is out there. So we're preparing a request for qualifications that should be out on the street in a couple of weeks. We'll use that to generate what we hope to be significant interest in the consultant community and then working with a number of firms to identify which one would best be suited to bring together this massive information in a way that we can present it to the public. So you should see RFQ on the street again in a couple of weeks and some preliminary work to get this thing established, planned out, and ready to go, anticipating a successful 2018. If that happens, we need to be underway by January of 2008 and anticipate producing a public review draft EIR. At this point, we have a six-month timeline to do that. Obviously, that may stretch after we get all the details out there, but we're letting the consultant community understand that by using existing information, focusing on what's new and changed, we need to turn this around in a very short time frame. But concurrent with all of that sort of thing is the 218 process, and I have John Diodati with me to give you an update on where we are with that. John.
Thank you, Mr. Rushton. Mr. Diodati, do you need to have that primed down there, or is there a sleeping mode for your presentation?
Let's do that at the end, or we'll do it at the end. It has my phone number. If anyone has any questions with the ballots, we'll just publish that at the end. Thank you, Chairman Lenthal, members of the board. My name is John Diodati with the County Public Works staff. I am here to update you on the ballot process. On August 28th, you instructed the clerk of the board to mail the property owner ballots, and 8,584 ballots were mailed. They began arriving in the mailboxes on Tuesday, September 4th. Since then, I personally have fielded about 200 phone calls, but I'd like to point out that the entire ballot process has been a countywide effort. The clerk's office and Vicki Shelby's staff has done an excellent job in getting the ballots, the envelope stuff, the labels on, and the ballots in the correct envelopes and mailed in a very timely manner. The auditor's office, they started receiving phone calls, and Barbara Godwin sent me an email with a list of questions and said that she was willing to answer those questions and take the phone call burden off of me if I could give her some answers to these questions, and our staff does appreciate that. And Reprographics, they printed the ballots and the envelope information, and Roland Granger in particular was excellent to work with and provided the information in a very, very timely manner. So I would like to thank all those individuals and departments. As of today, the clerk is reporting that about 700 ballots have been returned to her office. And I want to talk briefly about these the phone calls I've been receiving. There's three common issues that are brought up, one being that I am not the owner any longer, or individuals calling and saying, I just recently purchased the property, I am the new owner, and I don't have a ballot. Second question or issue has been that they believe their property may have been incorrectly assessed or are curious as to how the assessment was calculated. And lastly, we've been receiving questions from people who have received more than one ballot and are curious as to why. So I'm going to discuss those with you today. The first being the change in ownership. As I indicated, I've been receiving calls from both owners who do not own the property anymore or those who now own the property but did not receive a ballot, and that was a recent transaction. The reason is we send information from the assessor's records, which is a snapshot in time, so this was to be expected, and we have a mechanism in place to deal with it. New owners may submit a ballot before October 23rd if they're capable of providing to the clerk's office proof of ownership. That would be in a recorded grant deed, or they can take to the clerk's office a recorded document number for the deed, provide that to the clerk's office, and the clerk's office will issue that new owner a duplicate ballot. So anyone out there who's listening, if you have not received a ballot and you are a new owner in Los Osos, please call the clerk's office at 805-781-5080. And it's important to point out, too, that we will be issuing what is called a duplicate ballot. So if there is a ballot that has been sent to an owner who is no longer an owner, and the new owner comes forward with this information that shows they are the owner, the duplicate ballot will be issued, and the duplicate ballot will be counted. The old ballots will not be counted when we end the public hearing on October 23rd. Another question I've been receiving is from people who believe that they have possibly been assessed incorrectly. I received about four of these phone calls. These are important phone calls, and I've been working closely with the Wallace Group to coordinate quick responses to these questions. The Wallace Group, who was the assessment engineer, has called the owners and explained the methodology and done, in some instances, site visits to these properties to establish the assessments. And in talking with them today, no corrections have been made to the assessments for these four phone calls. And the last phone call, majority of the phone calls are regarding multiple ballots. There's been, in some instances, multiple ballots mailed to one APN. And what I've been explaining to people is that this is not an election like we're used to under an election code, where it's one ballot, one vote. This is a ballot process under the government code, which takes each ballot and weights it according to their proposed assessment. So because there's multiple property owners per parcel and we're instructed to take the information from the assessor's records and mail them to the property owners, there are cases where multiple ballots are going to one property. But it's not the ballot that you're looking at as the weight. It's the proposed assessment indicated on that ballot that is used in the calculations on October 23rd. Properties that have more than one owner, it can be a trust. Some examples are a trust that owns 100% of the property. A husband owns 50%, a wife owns 50%, a father owns 50% of a parcel, a son owns 50% of a parcel, or a husband owns 25%, a wife owns 25%, and they use their parents to help them purchase the house, so each parent owns 25% of that parcel. Those are some examples of where multiple ballots would be mailed. But getting back to how it's weighted, I know that's been my number one question. Again, it's not one ballot, one vote. If, let's say, an APN has one owner, John Doe, who owns 100%, and a single-family home, for this process, ballot process, he received a proposed assessment of $24,941.19. That's his proposed assessment. He received one ballot because it shows 100% owner, and it has a weight. That ballot has a weight of $24,941.19. Now, their next-door neighbor, a different APN number, has two owners, John Smith and his wife, Jane Smith. Each are shown to own 50%. They have the same proposed assessment of $24,941.19. This parcel is going to receive two ballots, and each ballot is going to have a weight one half of the total assessment. So each ballot's going to have $12,470.60 represented on there as their weight for this ballot. The sum of those is the $24,941. So even though they got two ballots, their weight compared to that one is still the same. And there are examples where three or four ballots went to one parcel, and it still stays the same. That it's the sum of all the ballots equal the total proposed assessment for that parcel. Now, there are instances where, let's say that now the next-door neighbor, another unique APN, the owner is shown as being John Smith, 50%, and John Smith, 50%. They have the same proposed assessment, $24,941.19. This parcel is going to receive two ballots, one to John Smith with half the total weighted assessment of $12,470.60, and one to John Smith with the same half of the total assessment, the same amount. Now, it's important to recognize John Smith could be two completely different people, and we cannot make the assumption that they're one individual. It could be John Smith the father and John Smith the son. So for that reason, we're mailing multiple ballots to the same parcel with the same name if it's shown in the assessor's records as such. And there's been numerous percentage combinations shown on the assessor's records, 33%, 33%, 33%, 25, 25, 25, 25, 50, 25, and 25, almost every combination you can think of. And when I've spoken to people about this, every single one of them has understood after I've explained this and walked away satisfied with my explanation. Recently, I've gotten a few questions saying that they're taking their envelope and they're peeling off their label and discovering that there's another label underneath the label and it has their neighbor's name underneath it. And there's a very simple explanation for this. After we printed the labels and the clerk's office put all the labels on the envelopes, we did another quality control test and discovered that we needed to relabel the envelopes. And we did so. And what this did was ensure that all the ballots would go to the correct property owners at the correct properties, which they did. Now, some have asserted that these labels are a sign of an evidence of the county making a mistake. But in reality, this is evidence that we've taken extra steps to make sure that every ballot went to the correct property owner and the correct property. So if someone out there advises you as a property owner to peel off your label, please realize that there is no productive reason to do so. And in summary regarding this issue, I think it's important to recognize that all ballots have been mailed to the correct property owner and the correct property. No one has received their neighbor's ballot. Ballots have names printed on them. They do not have labels. That's important to point out because your envelope might have the two labels, but your ballot has a printed name on it, and it does not have a label, so there's nothing to peel under to discover that there's another name. Your ballot is your ballot with your name on it. So the bottom line regarding these labels is that the concern is simply not an issue. Overall, the county ballot process is going extremely well, and we have no concerns regarding the integrity of the election or ballot process, excuse me. In conclusion, if we could get that up one more time, please. My phone number on here, 805-788-6633. Please call me with any questions. I'd be happy to talk to you. And on another note regarding the ballots, the clerk has reported that about 45 ballots have been returned to sender from the post office. This is to be expected. Also, we're right now researching the names on those. These all have... the address is correct on the labels, reflecting what's shown in the assessor's records. So if you're one of these 45, you do not have a ballot, please call the clerk's office or my phone number, and we'll get you a ballot as soon as possible. Thank you. That concludes my presentation.
Mr. Diodati, one more time slowly for the phone number for those that are listening that probably have to pull over or drive. Or
no problem. 805-788-6633.
Thank you, sir. Any questions of board members before we open the public?
I would assume that the project's website has these phone numbers in a prominent place. You had mentioned the clerk's phone number as well for certain procedural matters.
I believe it's up there, and there's also a question form. Someone can email questions, and they'll come to me as well, and I've answered a few of those.
And you had the website on the screen, but the easy way to get there is to go to the county's website,
to the Public Works Department, and within the Public Works Department, the Los Osos Wastewater Project is a fairly prominent project that should stand out, and you can get to the project website pretty directly.
It's on the left side of the screen.
Great. Thanks, John.
No problem.
Thank you. If there's no other questions from board members, we'll open to the public. The first request to speak is George Taylor, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Board, George Taylor, Los Osos. I'm here today to give you some of the reasons why we in Los Osos are voting no on 218. Number one, vote no to give the county a blank check to spend our money for an unknown project at an unknown price with final costs and with no final costs and no cap. Next, vote no to a $275 plus per month to start with. Vote no on trusting the county to do what's right for Los Osos residents. Vote no to the risk of being taxed right out of your home where you live. Vote no to any sewer at Tri-W. Vote no to the corrupt Regional Water Quality Control Board using fear as a weapon, and to electioneering by vindictive government agencies that sneer at Los Osos. Vote no on the County Board of Supervisors making the final choice of projects with Los Osos taxpayers paying the bill for the county's mistakes. Vote no to the most expensive sewer system per capita in the United States. Vote no because some homeowners will not know the project, the location, or the total cost of the final project. Vote no because the environmental analysis should be done before the 218, not afterwards. When the 218 is defeated, Los Osos will get a sewer that is affordable, and it won't be at Tri-W or a rework of Montgomery Harz's project out of town. We can do it, and we will do it with the Ranko's help. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Gwen Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. Mr. Diodati answered some of the concerns that seem to be floating around in Los Osos. The one concern major that he did not answer is, what happens when a person who is deceased and whose all the records have been changed in the county receives a ballot? What happens to that ballot? That is a very grave concern. We have a ballot that is going to cost every homeowner, rounded figures, $25,000, plus bonds, plus operating and maintenance, plus overhead and profit, and 8% on materials and 5% increase on the project itself. It is going to be a continuous cost, including but not limited to the connections. We have been told different things at different times. Example, we were told at a meeting that we who have our properties in a family trust would not receive more than one ballot. Not so. Then we were told that there would be what they call a wastewater project community open house at the middle school. Not so. We are having the community open house on Saturday, September the 29th, from 1 to 5 p.m. at Sunnyside School. There are a lot of false information pieces out there, one of them being a major concern that is on the material that was sent out by the county, giving those listings where there would be no charges for those properties. One of them says Morro Palisades. The Morro Palisades property will be used for disposal and will therefore receive no assessment. If you have not selected a project or a site, how do you propose to determine that that project is going, or that property is going to be not assessed because it's not going to be used? Now, we're in a question. Where do we stand? Is TriW on the market for a project, or is it off the market for a project? If it's off the market, then Morro Palisades property should be assessed. We have another query that's coming in. The people are saying, the Sierra Club is promoting a yes on 218. False. I called to make sure. This is the Sierra Club's paper, the Santa Lucian. And nowhere in this paper does it promote a 218 vote yes or no.
Mr. Taylor, thank you for your comments. Unfortunately, your time is up. Lindy Owen, followed by Gail McPherson.
Good afternoon. Lindy Owen from the Prohibition Zone. I am finding I have gotten two calls from people who have received different vote ballot numbers on the same APN with one single owner. In other words, there are duplicates going around, and I don't know why John didn't address that, because I'm sure he's gotten some calls. It's just a sign to me that this is pretty sloppy, and why in the world would somebody that bought a new property not be on the assessment list as a new property owner, so that we wouldn't be having to force them to go to the trouble of coming down here in person and proving that they own the property? It's on the tax roll. It should be corrected. And again, this happened the last time we had a 218 too. I think there's a big failure in those assessment rolls, and they have not been taken care of or updated properly. And just one more problem. At the TAC meeting last night, there were a number of issues that came up. You know, they're beginning their project evaluation on four projects plus TriW, which we were promised we would have two projects, and hopefully not TriW, but if they wanted to compare the old TriW. There's a number of things that are going on. Basically, the cons on any septic system, or excuse me, the step system, are very weighted, and they're exaggerated. They use words like the nuisance of regular pumping of a septic tank. When you go over and look at TriW, there's no bad language there. Questions such as the Broderson leach fields. If we don't have a project, why are we talking about Broderson is listed on all of these as where the water would be taken up to, and it's been rejected because it's too expensive to take it all the way back into town up to a hill on a $5 million piece of property. One of the things that really bothered me, though, out of this information that was handed out yesterday was the cost comparison of sample projects. And it says, component capital costs include 15% overhead and profit. So do you understand that this county is going to make a profit on whatever sewer you end up designing for us? It's right here in the paperwork, 15% overhead and profit for the county. Sorry, this whole process is wrong. The whole 218 is wrong. We should be looking at the best case of two projects. We should have done the EIRs. You could have asked us for $3 million, $5 million. If you did it right from the get-go, I wouldn't be standing here complaining and living a life of just complete frustration.
So Salvador Dali. Your time is up, but thank you for your comments.
Movie.
Gail McPherson, followed by Mark Lowe.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairman, Supervisors, and staff. My name is Gail McPherson from Los Osos. I have a lot of comments, but I'm going to abbreviate based on time. The first has to do with a press article that ran Sunday, September 2nd, that concerned me. And I just want to point out that the position on the 218 and the end quote are both wrong, as well as a lot of the factual information in the article. But with that, it was, I believe, coordinated with the mailing of the ballots, which I think is unfortunate. The next issue has to do with our position. Citizens for Clean Water, PISL-DIF, which is often called for short, has never and will not tell people how to vote. They have assisted individuals with information and will continue to do so. They need to know the cost and the consequences and let individuals vote without coercion or intimidation from the Water Board. With that, I'll move on to say that I want to thank Paavo Ogren for the excellent and concise presentation before the Central Coast Water Board on Friday, September 7th. It was very well received, and the board commended the county on its process and its schedule. Some privately acknowledged to me that they were thought the in-town project was awful, and they were glad that they had a chance to make it right. I want to thank Bruce Gibson for referencing the May 10th, 2007 Board of Supervisors letter to the Water Board and asked for support to vacate the orders. The appeal that we have filed is completely defensive, and with testimony, the board agreed to make their prior words about a level and fair playing field for all individuals true to their word, and they set a hearing for December 6th. It's unfortunate that it wasn't for October 19th when they could have set the hearing, but I think that with some encouragement, this could change. I'm asking people to write to them and ask for a October 19th public hearing to vacate the 46 individual enforcement orders. Last, I also would like to say that I'd like more information on the meeting for September 29th. And we also have asked if the county would like to use the PISL-DIF Monday the 17th meeting to discuss the ballots or give information to the public. We have a meeting on Monday the 17th at 7 at WAMU, Washington Mutual. And with closing, I'd say that no matter how a person votes, they need to make sure that the county keeps their promises, that they work hard to tell them what they need to know so that they can be hired. Because for all of the money that they're paying, the real issue here is if they're going to vote to hire the county to do the job. And I think they need to consider all of the issues and carefully vote. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, and thank you for publicly thanking Mr. Ogren and Supervisor Gibson. That's always a pleasant surprise.
Good afternoon.
Mark Lowe, followed by Tom Murphy.
Good afternoon, Chairman Lenthal, Board, Madam Clerk of the Board, and County Council. It's difficult to put into words when you're playing beat the clock at the podium. Difficult to get your 15 minutes of fame, 3 minutes at a time. I'd like to say a few words about the project in general and about the process in general. I believe that the process should be more about sustainability, affordability, and the ability to have options that technology can provide. Using 50 to 100-year-old technology to solve a problem when there is a laptop computer in the room is like arguing over which ribbon or type of carbon paper to purchase. Last night, I attended a few minutes of the TAC final meeting for the review, and I walked in to where they were arguing about which direction the wind was going to blow and when it was going to be blowing. And for citizens to be arguing about which way the wind blows from a source of pollution that is created by this process, I think needs to be reexamined by the voters and by everyone on this board who will be voting. Were I a resident, I am not, were I a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone, I would vote no. For many of the reasons that were eloquently stated a few speakers earlier, you don't have a project, you don't have a location, and you don't have a firm commitment for cost. And you may not have one for quite some time. time. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Tom Murphy, followed by Lynn. I'm sorry I'm not able to read this, but Lynn, I am able to say that I'm not going to allow you to surrender your time. We can't do that, but if you'd like to speak, you're certainly welcome to. Otherwise, you either have to speak for yourself or you lose your spot. I can't allow people to give time or trade time for somebody else to talk. Okay. Would you still like to speak then?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Murphy then, followed by Al Barrow.
Chairman Lenthal, Board. I've been asked to give an overview of myself a little bit in regard to my qualifications to facilitate the Los Osos Discharge Elimination Service that we have proposed to the county to serve the project. I have 35 years in the wastewater management industry. In the 70s, began in 1972, I owned and operated the largest septic service company in South Central Alaska. I designed, owned, and operated the first septic receiving facility in the state of Alaska. I was a licensed contractor. We did 80% of the repairs of failing on-site systems throughout the state. Had several crews that did that. I was a certified installer, qualified to design, operate, and maintain and repair on-site systems late in the 70s, all through the 80s. And in 1988, I went on to develop the third and most advanced extended aeration activated sludge biological process technology in the wastewater industry called the intermittent decant extended aeration process. Single basin process receives sewage in one end of the tank continuously and produces tertiary quality water out the other end of the tank. I developed that process for an on-site application, but we were fortunate enough that it met a large requirement to service larger applications. So a lot of my clients went on to be from the largest construction company in the world at the time, Thor Daniel, all the way down to Kentucky Fried Chicken, Walmart, Price, Costco, 100 plants all over the world we designed, operated, and maintained. I'm a licensed operator. Through the 90s, I acquired 6 patents on that most advanced process, and most recently, within the last 3 years, I've acquired 3 more patents on a hydroelectric turbine that reclaims 90% of electricity, 80 to 90% of electricity generated by the process that goes in a reactor. Also have upgraded the Best Step to a Best Step Ultrafiltration 900. That system produces water that meets the same quality of water as is produced for your drinking water supply. Eliminates the discharge of pollutants and meets the qualifications as defined in federal law, United States Code, Title 33, Chapter 26, which is required.
Mr. Murphy, unfortunately you're out of time, but thank you for your comments. Supervisor Asajjan has a question for you, Mr. Murphy, before you step down. Supervisor Asajjan has a question of you or for you before you step down.
Mr. Murphy, the product you designed and got it patented, do you have a brochure or is there a website I can go and learn more about it, or can you tell me who manufactures it and where are they and any reference?
Yes, sir. We have suppliers that take care of providing all of our components for us. Matter of fact, Renko was mentioned earlier. Renko provides the tanks for the on-site systems that we use.
And where are they located?
They're located in Oregon. In Oregon, the website that you can go to, we just got up, nowastewater.com.
No weights?
No wastewater.
No wastewater.
.com. All together, and that you can go to, and it also will take you to a website that we've had for a very long time, which is AESwastewater.com, that will explain the biological process technology. The nowastewater.com is focused and directed toward providing information to the people of the community, the county, and the people of Los Osos, so that they can see what their alternatives are.
And you mentioned some of the people you have had business with. Can you give me a name that for we can call for a reference?
I can provide you a reference list.
Would you please?
I will.
Okay.
I will.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Al Barrow, followed by Richard Markinson.
Hello, my name is Al Barrow from Los Osos, and you all know me, so I don't need a reference. But I would provide them if it was demanded of me. The Water Board last Friday gave some positive reassurance to the community that they would not do selective enforcement anymore, and they scheduled a meeting to rescind that the 45 CDOs in December. And I would like to thank Mr. Gibson and Mr. Ogren for making that request to vacate the enforcements. It's a very important thing that in a democracy we do not have to base our decisions on fear. In regard to the county, why don't we believe you, Jerry? We don't believe you because there's a credibility gap. For example, the county staff says that STEP is on the table with gravity, and we have the most expert STEP company in the United States willing to come in and give a presentation, answer questions, correct myths. They did not even get an invitation to come to the meeting in this last part of September. Did not get an invitation to come. That's just one of the many things. The TAC meeting last night, they disagreed with the county over the numbers. They could not verify that the report that they were going to be submitting to you because they did not have the county's numbers on cost for the various project models. One of the other problems we have is there's absolutely no relief for the lowest income people in the community. There is no grants. There is no strategy for the lowest income people or the renters. Those are the people that don't have enough money to buy a home. That's a problem. Orenco would like the opportunity to come in and debate the gravity versus the step. I have a paper here for you, which I'm going to submit, and I want each of you to read this. It's only 10 points. It explains why gravity will not work in the Los Osos environment. You have not taken the project yet. Without a commitment for the project, you're asking for $25,000 commitment for each property owner, plus whatever costs will come up after that. That is inappropriate. That is unfair. That is asking too much of the citizens of Los Osos. The process is flawed. Thank you for your time, and I'm recommending read your yellow flyer, make your own decision, but in my opinion, voting no would be the appropriate decision right now.
Thank you for your comments, and also thank you for taking time to recognize Mr. Ogren and Supervisor Gibson for the good work that they do. Richard Markinson, followed by Jerry Walsh.
Richard Markinson, at your last board meeting, we heard from both Supervisor Lenthal and Gibson that process regarding the Los Osos wastewater project was nothing if not rout in integrity. Being someone who believes that an unfettered process will lead to an unbiased conclusion, I must say that this process has been rushed, manipulated, and flawed with inaccurate consultant input. Mr. Lenthal, you said that integrity was always at the forefront of former Supervisor Bianchi's input on this issue. I have to ask you then, where was her integrity when she participated in radio ads for the No on Recall / Van Doren-Ashkarner Committee, and when she used to tell those of us who pioneered Move the Sewer that she wasn't going to answer questions about the S word, as she put it, at public meetings? She also repeatedly told us, you can't move the sewer out of town because you can't cross a creek. Where's the integrity of sending out the assessment ballots before holding a well-advertised town hall meeting to explain the monthly and annual costs associated with this project to the people paying for it? How did integrity play a role in not waiting to hear definitively, one way or the other, on the WERDA grant, 30-year loan repayment options, and the possibility of a 0% interest loan before asking many in Los Osos to mortgage their future livelihood for a sewer that is now being touted by some as an investment in Los Osos. Tell that to the 80-year-old couple on fixed income. Oh, I forget. We have reverse mortgages for them. It took a lot of integrity to accept a flawed fine screening report on the notion that staff and consultants will make the appropriate corrections as they proceed. Questions are asked, and some are repetitious. Some are asked, though, and never answered. As an example, I asked a question at your last meeting that I know was never asked and never answered before. And finally, before my time runs out, there was a complete lack of integrity exhibited when you made your selections for the Technical Advisory Committee, which is filled with conflicts of interest. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Jerry Walsh, followed by David Dugan.
Jerry Walsh, Los Osos. I'd like to give you some of the reasons why I am voting no on Proposition 218. As a citizen of the United States, I will not be subtly coerced or threatened into voting. The Water Board does not have to electioneer anymore. Bill Morim, in his editorial, is doing it for them in the Telegram Tribune. Reason two, when intelligent, level-headed people get up in front of the TAC committee and bring up flaws, errors, questions, concerns, and the head of the committee then says, "Your 2 minutes are up, thank you, next," and nothing ever gets done with their concerns or questions about the process, about the facts. Number three, my conscience will not allow me to vote yes for an assessment that, although I am able to afford, will force some of my friends and neighbors to sell their homes and leave Los Osos. Moving because you lose a job, moving to accept a job promotion, moving to be closer to family, moving for medical reasons, these are all legitimate reasons for moving from Los Osos. Not, "I'm moving because I can't afford my sewer bill." Unconscionable. The county's desire for our affirmative vote should be worth grant funding and loan repayment extension guarantees, not just great expectations. I just was in the medicine shop in Los Osos. They're selling raffle tickets for a painting to raise money for the folks in Los Osos who can't afford their prescriptions. This is now. Can you imagine when those same folks have $300 a month payments to make? Talking about a friend of mine in the ballot process. Since 1995, he's been the only one owning his home. He received one ballot that was weighted at the $12,470-some. He had to call in the county to find out why he's only been weighted that much. Guess a day or two later, he received a second ballot for the same amount. Now, he took the time to try and find out all this, call in, make several phone calls, and was told, because back in 1995, he somehow had a different owner on the property. But how many people are going to take the time to do that, and how many people are going to throw the second ballot away and decide, oops, that's just a mistake? And lastly, Ms. McPherson represents Pizzledif. She has continually said she's not campaigning for this. This morning, we all received at our homes Ms. McPherson's Pizzledif vote yes on 218. How hypocritical. The blood of the economic cleansing of Los Osos is not going to be on my hands. I'm voting
no. Ms. Walsh, unfortunately, your time is up, but thank you for your comments. You. David Dugan, followed by a last request to speak, Steve Sennett.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. I have a question on the 218 ballots. If you're a single homeowner and you receive three ballots and the assessment is divided evenly upon each ballot, there's no problem there. And if you send all three in and they all three make it to the elections office, whoever's going to be counting the ballots, then what is the process? I talked about this earlier. What if two of the ballots are found to be that have a verifiable signature, but one of them doesn't? What if there's a problem with the process of counting the vote? I think this is probably the question we should probably asking the elections clerk, because we need to know whether or not they're going to validate the signatures and then count the vote, or count the vote. Then if there's a question about how the vote turns out, validate the signatures. That's the big question, because a lot of people got, I know at least one person personally who got three ballots with the assessment divided evenly, but the worry is, are all my ballots going to be counted? Can something go wrong and one or two of them not be counted? And that's a process thing. Maybe we should bring Judy Rodewald in here next week to answer that question. The TAC, oh my God. It has turned into a political action committee, divided between two camps. Pro, Tri-W, Gravity, MVR, pro, STEP, out of town, mostly ponding groups. I think that they've outlived their usefulness. We're not really there. They are actually staying at the meetings. We don't have the right numbers to make certain decisions, and yet we're going to be putting these numbers and using these numbers. We actually have people who are, when somebody brings something up about one system, they have a counter with the other system, or vice versa. And to me, this is not objective. I think maybe Noel King or in this board or somebody should get together and look at whether or not the TAC is a useful body anymore. I don't think they are. I really don't. I have been watching them. I really trust Rob Miller. He came to bat a couple of weeks ago and really laid it out technically on some issues. Maybe Karen Vendetti. She's been straightforward. Those are the only two on the TAC that I really could trust to be straight with the community. And I think the rest overall are either not present, says as John Fouché, who's been a non-entity, and or a present and not speaking and not speaking their mind. And I don't think, well, to end it, I don't think TAC is useful anymore.
Thank you for your comments. Our last request to speak is Steve Sennett.
Good afternoon, Board. First of all, my name is Steve Sennett. I'm a resident of Los Osos and also a board member on the CSD. First of all, I'd like to...
Mr. Senator, could you speak louder? People in the back of the room are having a hard time hearing. If they can't hear you, I'm sure I'm going to get emails or phone calls saying that the audience couldn't hear you.
This give me an extra minute. No.
I'll give you an extra 15. In fact, we'll start the clock over for you. How's that?
Yes, Steve Sennett, Los Osos, and also director of the CSD, one of the directors. I'd first like to show my appreciation for Supervisor Gibson and Pava Ogren for supporting the community in requesting that the Water Board drop the CDOs. That was very, very much appreciated and needed. Second, I'd like to show my support for the county's process for the wastewater project development. And I'd like to further encourage you to develop innovative means to develop financial resources for the community besides the 218. I think there's a lot of things that are at your fingertips that would otherwise not be available to the CSD were it to handle the project. We know that the CSD is going through bankruptcy proceedings, and how it would manage a project at this point, I think the people have to realize that this is going to be a difficult thing to manage in light of that. I'd also like to say that the yellow flyer that was shown previously is not any effort of the CSDs. I'm sure you probably know there is no consensus on the part of the board members in regard to the 218 vote. It may lean one way or the other, but it's not consensus. And I think that is all I'd like to say today, and I appreciate talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, and also thank you, too, for taking the time to publicly recognize Mr. Ogren and Supervisor Gibson for the good work that they do. With that...
Is it possible for me to take 30 seconds?
No.
Just point out that this is not
no.
from my group?
No.
Okay, thank you.
very important.
Before I close public comment, is there anybody else who would like to speak? Someone else wants to bring that forward, but we have to have rules and bring things forward and follow the process and make it fair for everybody. Seeing no one else step forward, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. Mr. Nadi or Mr. Hutchinson, did you want to respond to any of the questions that came up during public comment?
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer some of the questions about the 218. One question was about a deceased homeowner. That would be treated as a change in ownership, because I imagine there would be a change in ownership, and we would be able to issue a duplicate ballot to whoever the new owner is for that particular instance. Also, it was a question about trusts and a trust receiving more than one ballot. There are on the assessor's records instances where it is showing a trust owning 50% and a trust owning 50%, and I would like to remind everyone that that does sum 100%, and those ballots were sent to that trust with a weighted amount for the total proposed assessment. Another question was about one person receiving two ballots, and that I did address that when I gave you the example of John Smith owning 50% and John Smith owning 50%. Again, we cannot make the assumption that that is the same individual, and two ballots would be mailed to that household, one for John Smith and one for John Smith. If it is a father and son, then they each have their own ballot. If it turns out to be the same person, those ballots both indicate that it's 50% for John Smith and 50% for John Smith, and if it is the same person, that will sum 100% for that individual. And I don't think there were any other questions. There were some hypothetical what if.
Mr. Nadi, excuse me for a minute. If you folks would like to have a current conversation, please do so in the lobby. It's being disruptive to the people that are trying to talk right now. I understand there's some issues, but you need to take them outside. Sorry, Mr. Nadi.
That's okay. Thank you. There were some hypothetical what if scenarios presented, and staff feels it's a bit premature to try to give any sort of answer towards those right now, and the clerk's office will treat those when they arise, if they arise. Thank you.
Mr. Hutchinson, did you also want to respond?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there was one comment about the cost estimates and the fine screening report and the line item referring to profit and overhead and a number given of 15%. I think it's fairly obvious in those cost estimates, but I would like to reiterate that refers to the contractors that would be building the project. We assume that the contractors and private engineers involved would for their trouble, want to make some profit and cover their overhead.
In other words, or in shorter terms, that's not a county figure, that's a individual contractor figure.
No, there is no profit in this for the county.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson? Sorry, I hit his line.
Go ahead. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask staff to possibly address an issue that was raised by two speakers, Ms. Walsh and Steve Sennett both commented about the cost, and I talked with Mr. Ogren briefly about this yesterday, and we've spent a great deal of time talking about the project and gone through a lot of processes to help refine what the project might look like. There's still many options out on the table. We've talked about location and opened up a variety of options for siting the new treatment plant. We have talked about the cost of the various options and the various sites, but one of the issues that keeps coming back repeatedly is the affordability of the project, and I know that we have looked into that issue as well, but perhaps we haven't done as good a job educating the community about the ramifications of the financing of the project and what we might do after the final project is determined to help lower the cost. And I'm familiar with some of the things that we've talked about. The design-build construction option, for example, will allow us to get the best possible efficiencies and cost in building the project, and we're certainly going to do that. We just have estimates at this point of what the project is going to cost ultimately, but we have to start somewhere. But we will make every effort and take advantage of every opportunity to lower those costs. But some other things that we might begin to do now to let the community know that the cost of the project for each individual in the community is something that we're seriously considering and seriously concerned about, and maybe putting some effort into educating the community about financing options. What Mr. Ogren has talked a little bit about that, whether we use the state revolving loan fund, whether we use private financing or bonds or some other mechanism, it makes a tremendous impact on what the overall costs are going to be to the individual. But we have all of those options to consider. Lois Capps's office has mentioned that there's potentially $35 million available through the federal government to lower the overall cost of the project, and that's a very real option. Also, there are programs like community development block grants that can be applied for once we have a project, home funds, federal funding available. All of these things are available to help lower the cost of the project, and we will utilize those. I don't know if there's an opportunity for staff to begin addressing some of those options that we're going to pursue, so folks know that, you know, affordability is a huge issue for us. And there are things that we can do to help with that affordability issue in the community, and we're going to do that. It's early yet, but I think at the same time, it's early to be definitive, to be exact, but it's not too early to let the community know that it's a serious component of the whole project as far as we're concerned, and we're going to do everything that we can to get the cost down and keep it down per individual homeowner in Los Osos. And it all rests on the ability to have a successful 218 vote. And if we can, you know, assure the community that we're going to do everything that we can do to keep that cost down for the overall project and therefore for the individual homeowner, it might help with the success of the 218 vote.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you. And I appreciate Supervisor Patterson expressing his understanding of the importance of affordability in this community and the affordability of this project to this community. I'd let Mr. Ogren respond if he wants to, but I would point out that he and staff have brought before us strategies that we have endorsed that will address every conceivable approach to lowering costs, from private industry competition through design build, through grant applications, through structured rates, and so forth and so on. And every one of those strategies is in play right now. Pav and I are headed to Sacramento on Thursday to start our lobbying effort as regards the necessary legislative issues that might need to be addressed in this. I see him approaching the lectern, so I'll let him go on about that if that is his desire.
Mr. Ogren.
Certainly, Chairman Lenthal, members of the board, Pav Ogren, Public Works Department. I don't think that I can actually express, you know, our approach on the affordability issue and different funding mechanisms better than Supervisors Patterson and Gibson have done. Certainly, it has been one of the points that we have made on a number of occasions in the community. I don't think it can be reiterated enough. It is one of the reasons why we have tried to make sure that everybody is clear that while technologies are important, financing terms are also extremely important, and we don't want to leave any rock unturned in looking at all the different components of making for a successful project. You know, again, it is one of the many efforts that we're focusing on. At the September 29th town hall meeting that we're going to be having, we will certainly again reiterate those different funding mechanisms. One of the things that I think it's been very challenging in the community is that while we have talked about them, we also recognize that there's a lot of work in order to get them into play. And if we overemphasize them and overemphasize possibilities, then we certainly would be subject to the criticism that we're making promises prematurely. And so these have been topics of discussion. They are efforts that are current and will be ongoing, but we've also been very cognizant of the fact of giving the community some realistic expectations with respect to costs. And I'd be glad to answer any other questions.
Supervisor Gibson, did you want to continue? Well,
I would if I might. I think I appreciate Pablo's comments on affordability. Appreciate Mr. Diodati's repeated explanation about the appearance of certain ballots to certain individuals and the basis on which multiple ballots might show up. There had been some questions, hypotheticals raised. We have Vicki Shelby of our clerk recorder's office, who is in charge of the ballot handling. If she would choose to add anything, I think that would be helpful. If she is, I would only preface her remarks by indicating that our clerk recorder's office is renowned for the quality of and integrity of its ballot handling procedures, and maybe you could give us the quick rundown on any issues that you see needing addressed.
Vicki Shelby, clerk recorder's office. John pretty much did a really great job. We've been working real closely with him. The ballots that have come back as being undeliverable have shown, as he indicated in the system, the assessor system, that they are the correct addresses. We're doing our level best to find some of these folks. We are hearing from some folks today, more than any other day, I think, who are calling now to say they haven't received their ballot and asking about it. And we've developed a process in which we can issue a duplicate ballot. We've also created a process in which we can issue a ballot to a new property owner. So we're moving forward. We've actually had two requests for one of each of those today. The ballots are coming in fast and furious, and we're just moving ahead with it. There was one issue raised by Dave Dugan that maybe I should respond to. There was a question about the signatures on the ballot and how we check the signatures on the ballot. We don't. We don't check the signatures on the ballot because this is not a voter election. This is a property owner election, and we don't have any signatures on file for some of these folks because they don't live in the area or they aren't voters in our area. What we're looking for and what the code says we have to look for is that the ballot is signed. And that's what we're looking for, which is another reason we put the names back on the ballot so that we can try to match the name to the person's, the signature to the person's name on the ballot.
Okay.
If a question raises.
And okay.
I don't really have anything else to add.
Thank you.
Ms. Shelby, if I might, a big thank you to you and your staff because you've been doing a great job. I've received calls also of people saying when they do have questions that they get answers or their calls returned in a timely fashion. And thank you for also thanking Mr. Diodati because together you have been a good team on this.
He's answering most of the calls, I can tell you. We're getting our share of them also, but we reach a point where we're at the end of what we can answer because of the technical ends of it, and we're passing them on, and I know John's getting back to them each day, so he's doing a good job.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude very quickly. I very much appreciate the efforts of all staff and all departments that are handling this, and I would hope that my colleagues and that the public listening can appreciate by the responses that you've heard from various staff members that there is it is nothing but of the highest quality the ballot handling procedures here. I think various speakers assailed the integrity of the county process in terms of the ballot handling, the oddity of more than one ballot showing up in the same name, and that somehow this constituted a sloppy process or a big failure. And I am quite certain, and I would trust that you are as well, that the responses you have heard show that to be a completely unwarranted conclusion as regards the quality of county process on handling this ballot process. Similarly, there have been assertions as to the lack of integrity in the process by the scheduling of this ballot relative to town hall meetings, the scheduling of the balloting relative to the certainty on grants and things, and again, for the listening public, I would emphasize that these issues and assertions have been raised on a number of occasions and in every way responded to by the project team and other members of staff here. And finally, I understand Supervisor Shajian questioning Mr. Murphy about some of the details, the technical aspects of the system that he has proposed. I would again point my colleagues to the county process, which I think Pablo and the team have done an outstanding job in structuring, so that private industry proposals such as that can come in and be considered at the appropriate time. In terms of this 218 election, that is not the time that we are considering in detail these specific private industry proposals. Pablo has explained on many occasions as to how that will be handled as we move forward through environmental review and project selection. I know that the project team has requested technical information on a number of different private industry proposals, and at the same time, those private industry proposals are going to need to make an approach to the regional board to see if they have the ability to proceed. The same holds for the question of evaluating the step process, which we've been over for many times before here. So I would conclude again with thanks to staff and urge the community of Los Osos to get engaged. I'm very encouraged to hear the numbers of ballots coming back at this early age. Appreciate Mr. Diodati's availability by phone and over the internet. And in closing, I just should make this one announcement. My office hours, which are usually second and fourth Tuesdays, will be canceled this Tuesday, the 13th. Mr. Ogren and I are going to be in Sacramento.
You mean Thursday, sir. You're saying Tuesday, but I think you're meaning Thursday.
Excuse me. Let me start again. My office hours are normally second and fourth Thursdays in Los Osos at Sea Pines. This Thursday, September 13, office hours are canceled. Mr. Ogren and I are going to be in Sacramento on Los Osos issues. We'll be back there on September 27th. Thank you.
Thank you. This requires no further action. So on that note, we will stand adjourned. Thank you for your time.
Mr.